Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 24th, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our site. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of John, and we'll be reading chapter 10 tonight. So, Gospel of John, chapter 10.
Chapter 10. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he that entereth in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calleth his own sheep by name, and leadeth them out. And when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. And a stranger will they not follow, but will flee from him, for they know not the voice of strangers. This parable spake Jesus unto them, but they understood not what things they were which he spake unto them. Then said Jesus unto them again, Verily, verily, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out, and find pasture. The thief cometh not but for to steal, and to kill, and to destroy. I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. But he that is an hireling, and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming, and leaveth the sheep, and fleeth, and the wolf catcheth them, and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth, because he is an hireling, and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and am known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have which are not of this fold. Them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice. And there shall be one fold, and one shepherd. Therefore doth my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I might take it again. No man taketh it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. This commandment have I received of my Father. There was a division therefore again among the Jews for these sayings, and many of them said, He hath a devil and is mad. Why hear ye him? Others said, These are not the words of him that hath a devil. Can a devil open the eyes of the blind? And it was at Jerusalem the feast of the dedication, and it was winter. And Jesus walked in the temple in Solomon's porch. Then came the Jews round about him, and said unto him, How long dost thou make us to doubt? If thou be the Christ, tell us plainly. Jesus answered them, I told you, and ye believed not. The works that I do in my Father's name, they bear witness of me. But ye believe not, because ye are not of my sheep, as I said unto you. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. And I give unto them eternal life, and they shall never perish, neither shall any man pluck them out of my hand. My Father, which gave them me, is greater than all, and no man is able to pluck them out of my Father's hand. I and my Father are one. Then the Jews took up stones again to stone him. Jesus answered them, Many good works have I showed you from my Father. For which of those works do ye stone me? The Jews answered him, saying, For a good work we stone thee not, but for blasphemy, and because that thou, being a man, makest thyself God. Jesus answered them, Is it not written in your law, I said, Ye are gods? If he called them gods, unto whom the word of God came, and the scripture cannot be broken, say ye of him whom the Father hath sanctified and sent into the world, Thou blasphemest, because I said, I am the Son of God? If I do not the works of my Father, believe me not, but if I do, though ye believe not me, believe the works, that ye may know and believe that the Father is in me, and I in him. Therefore they sought again to take him, but he escaped out of their hand, and went away again beyond Jordan, into the place where John at first baptized, and there he abode. And many resorted unto him, and said, John did no miracle, but all things that John spake of this man were true. And many believed on him there.
Okay, Jan, are you here tonight? Do we have any questions or any announcements?
Yes, I have a number of questions, John.
All right.
I'd like to start with a comment, really. If you have questions, and you email them in for the Monday call, and whatever you're asking help on, or information on, is going to occur during the next week before the next Monday call. Send them in early as soon as you know that you're going to need help. Now, I start logging questions in starting Tuesday morning after the last call. If you send them in on a Monday night, like at 7:15, that's probably the latest they will get on the call. I do log them in order, so if they all have the same urgency, the first ones that gets logged in will be the ones that get answered. If you get them in after about 8:45, the chances are extremely good that they will just go into next week's call. We normally have too many questions for a call anyway. Also, a reminder that we have the upcoming... Let me pull it up here. Red Pill Expo, and that's in 13 days it's going to start. It starts the 5th of June, and this runs the 6th of June, only 2 days. There is a preview on the 4th that you can sign up where you can meet some of the presenters and that sort of thing. This is in the Black Hills, it's in Rapid City, South Dakota. There are many, many things to see in that area. Mount Rushmore, if you've never seen it, there's something to behold. Crazy Horse Monument is another one. There are many other parks around there, wind caves and so on. A tar pit where there are artifacts from many mammoths and things of that nature. It's both a good area to explore just from a tourism point of view, and the presentations are going to be excellent. They're going to have great talks. You can go to just the redpillexpo.org and scan down. I think there's something like 30 to 35 different presenters, and all of them have a lot to say. They're all current. They're state-of-the-art people. I would highly recommend that if you have the time and aren't that far out from there to attend. If you can't make it at all, there's a lot of the presentations that would be worth listening to, and you can sign up to listen to them on the web as they occur. And that, I think, runs for about a week after the conference, so you don't have to be there every minute to be able to listen to all of the talks that you'd like. If you're going to go, please send me an email. We're trying to get enough people together so that we can get a table there. Yeah, it's an excellent opportunity for NLA to meet the public. With that said, the first question of the evening, John.
Okay.
We have finally got our sheriff to meet with us tomorrow. Now, this is a prime example. This came in late, just before the start of the meeting. I would like to know how to handle and what are the proper questions we should be asking him. Can you help us with this important step?
Well, we have written a plan on approaching the sheriff. Do we know if they started a committee of safety yet, and if they went through the whole process? Doesn't say anything about that, does it? Jan? That's all they wrote, right? You don't have any other information?
No, there's no more information on that.
All right. Well, anyway, I'm presuming you started the committee of safety and that you went through the process of preparing a group in order to approach the sheriff and by forming a committee of safety. The plan that we have is found under People's Duty, and you come down and click on Committee of Safety, and you get a lot of information. And, of course, we have handbooks also, and one of the handbooks lays out that program. But you can get a lot of that information, of course, right on the website here under People's Duty. With the Committees of Safety, one of the things that needs to be done in organizing your Committee of Safety, you have to get a charter, put a charter together, and you have to do resolutions and planning for this and prepare a copy of those things to hand to the sheriff prior to the meeting. And so you're kind of priming the sheriff. And once he goes through the charter and sees the process that we've laid out, which is, you know, the way any normal process of committee or anything, even government itself, you know, we have charters, we have resolutions, and a process. So then the sheriff would know exactly how you organized your group and what your plans are. We also are planning and been teaching that to get a hold of the book, Government by Consent, which still hasn't been released. But by the way, we did do the final paperwork, and I should be signing off on that. I was hoping to do it today, but I didn't get any papers in email yet today to get that signed off on yet. And so once it's signed off, a couple of weeks, it should be in print. So it'll be going to print as soon as I sign off on it. So that could be tomorrow, I guess. But anyway, part of the plan is to get a hold of the book, Government by Consent. We have a process going through right now in order to get constitutional sheriffs. We have a campaign for constitutional sheriffs. And the plan is to get together and buy a book for your sheriff. And that book will be introduced to your sheriff by another sheriff. So we have a sheriff who is writing a paper and a letter that will be accompanying the books as they go out to the sheriffs. Our plan is to get the sheriffs to every sheriff in every county in America. We've got 3,134 counties. And so that's sort of priming the sheriff. First of all, again, it's giving them information, and when we make contact with them, they'll discover that the organization, you know, grouping and working together across the nation is the same organization that's approaching that particular sheriff. And again, what's most important, the sheriff needs to understand who you are and what your plans are, and that's why it's necessary to write a charter and a resolution. We've written the framework for charters and the resolutions, and people can, you know, add to them and alter them accordingly. We do ask everyone to kind of stick as close as they can with the basic framework so that every county across America, you know, is interchangeable in a sense with each other. We're all doing things the same way. And when we have to approach things on a state level, the counties will be able to come together a lot easier because they have the same plan. And if we had to do something on a federal level, the states can come together pretty easily because, again, we're all doing things the same way. We have the same plan. For instance, Agenda 21 has to be approached on a national level. We have to shut it down. And we can do that, but again, only we can do that if we have government by consent. And the only way you can have government by consent is to start off with the Committee of Safety. Our founding fathers created this nation via a Committee of Safety, and it's the same process that they use that we're using in order to take back our government and restore our republic. And in that Committee of Safety, you know, we're supposed to be getting together to work to take control of the political process through the committee man process, which is an existing system that's already set up for the people, but it's been hijacked many years ago, and I guess the powers that be, so to speak, are in control of them, and we need to take it back. We do have a plan on how we might take them back. Also, we need to take back our courts of justice. Right now, they're courts of injustice. They're courts of civil law. It has nothing to do with we the people. We're supposed to be under common law. The Constitution in Article 3, Section 2, I believe it is pretty clear that, in fact, let me open it up and read that. Article 2, I think it's Section, Article 3, I believe it's Section 2.
Okay.
Article 3, Section 2, yes. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. So that is the key. You know, we're under law, and equity, the purpose of equity is to control the agencies, the government agencies. That's where the legislators have the power and the authority to write codes and statutes and regulations in order to control the different government agencies, and also to control commercial activity between the states. And every state also does the same thing. They have, of course, legislators who is to write equity, law in equity, which, again, is regulations, codes, and statutes in order to control the state agencies, you know, the individuals within those state agencies, and also to control the commercial activities that the state is responsible to control. And and so they have brought us under civil law back in 1938 through the Rules Enabling Act of 1934. And so they abolished, they've done away with common law. Common law and the Constitution is no longer available in any of our courts anywhere in America. The people don't know that. Occasionally, of course, you know, they make it look like you still have a constitution, and you makes it look like you still have a Bill of Rights and that you have natural rights. But really, they're just allowing people to have certain rights if it doesn't affect them. But once you go up against the establishment to try to correct the problems, of course, you're going to be shut down and shut down very quickly. We have been battling in the courts for some 13 years or so. And for us, it's very clear, and we've been writing a lot of papers, nailing it to the doors, and revealing ultimately the subversion that the judiciary, particularly on the federal level, and this is also, it follows up also on the state levels too. All these courts are unjust and unlawful and are under civil law, which has nothing to do with we the people. And so that's what National Liberty Alliance, is, of course, is all about, is to reestablish the law, to reestablish control of our government through the committees of safety. And the committees of safety also is to be working on rebuilding the militia. So when I'm asked, you know, how do you approach the sheriff, it takes a couple of months to prepare to approach the sheriff. So I'm not sure exactly how much preparation was done for the sheriff. And again, you know, we also have a plan on what to talk about to the sheriff when you first meet with him. And also maybe even, I think, well, I'm pretty sure we put some a special meeting together for the sheriff where a certain, you know, a PowerPoint video might be played in the beginning of the meeting and then working into, you know, discussion with the sheriff, maybe a Q&A and different things. But again, the sheriff needs to know who you are as a people. They have to know what the group is all about. And that's what these, again, under the Committees of Safety, a People's Duty Committee of Safety, you'll see, that's what the charter is all about. Let me go back here again. That's what the charter is all about. It makes it quite clear exactly what it is and what our purposes are. And the same thing with the resolutions, what the intentions are. You can go down to handbooks and you can find the same information where you can download PDF copies. And for instance, here's a PDF copy of the Committee of Safety Charter. And it's laid out in a fashion that is normal to committees and different organizations, particularly, you know, governmental organizations, local government particularly. And it lays out everything, the objectives, how you formed, as far as, you know, having chairman, co-chairman, and a treasurer and secretary and so on, what the duties are, the meetings, the communications, how voting worked, what the agenda is, and the keeping of minutes and the process to be operated under Robert's Rules of Order. So that's one of the things, again, that is the charter. The other thing, again, is resolutions, okay, Committee of Safety resolutions. And here's a copy of that. And basically, again, you can, these are PDFs, you can download them. And again, every county has its own unique problems and situations. So everyone has to really add a lot to this. And as time goes on, you'll be adding new resolutions and even maybe even different information, more information into your charter as you continue and grow and get seasoned in the process that you're working within. There are subcommittees that need to be developed within these committees of safety. We need to reform the militia from the ground up. We've got a book on that. So, again, you can get that book also. You can find that. Well, under the handbooks, we do have a militia codes, rules, and resolutions. So, again, once a committee is formed and a subcommittee is formed, then that subcommittee starts working on this necessary thing, which is, again, resolutions for the militia of the several states. We also have a course that everyone should take that becomes part of the process of the militia, and everyone in the Committee of Safety should be part of the militia. and that's how our founding fathers did it. And we also are organizing, there needs to be another subcommittee that organizes the administrators for the courts. We need four administrators. And also we need a paralegal, so a total of five people to take on the job. And this particular job is a paid position within the county and in the courthouse itself, where we would take control of the juries as common law requires. We can't have a government controlling the juries because that's the fox in charge of the hen house, and that's the problem we have today. These people have taken control of our juries, and that's why there's so much injustice. And a lot of these courts, especially the lower courts, they don't even have juries. They don't even have a grand jury, or sometimes not even a petit jury, where some judge makes the rules and operates under some civil law that they wrote up, which is unlawful in a natural law republic such as ours. So, again, there's a lot of work to be done, and we figure it takes about 3 months to really organize your county, and then you approach the sheriff. So if you've done it prematurely, I guess you can meet with them and have some conversation with them, talk about some of your intentions, and then go back and organize and prepare properly and make another appointment to meet up with him where you could, or her, in order to produce your resolutions. And also, of course, your charter. Now, all of these handbooks, we have a Committee of Safety handbook, which lays this, all these details out, everything I'm talking about right now, is laid out in the Committee of Safety handbook. 74 pages. There's lots of details. What your first meeting is about, how to organize, how to everything you need, and how to get the subcommittees going, and all the information you need. And of course, people will add to it, and we all are sort of unique in our own way, in our own counties, within our own states, and we add to the things that we need, and we adjust things if we think we need to adjust some of the framework stuff that we put together. But generally speaking, we should all try to stay as true to the framework as possible. And again, that's so we're kind of interchangeable from county to county and even state to state. So we're all on the same page when we talk and we work together. There's also, has to be formed as a committee of correspondence. And a committee of correspondence is involved with communications with other committees of safety within your state, so across your state. Of course, you want to start close by with your sister counties and work through, and maybe once a year come together, all the counties that create a committee of safety, maybe have a meeting together once a year, get something going. As a matter of fact, maybe the best thing for that is to do something in the summertime or something, maybe on the 4th of July, and make a day of it and get together as a meeting and enjoy, make it a family event and so on. And, of course, the militia should get together at that point, maybe at that event, to have some target practice and just do various things. People could be very creative on that kind of a thing, however they want to work that out. But that's a strong suggestion. But the committee is a safety. I mean, the Committee of Correspondence, which is a subcommittee within the Committee of Safety, is responsible for making that contact, those communications. Also, they are also responsible to try to encourage counties next door to get committees of safety going, and even across the state to get committees of safety going within their counties if they don't already have one. So again, this whole plan is laid out, and we strongly suggest following the plan step by step, point by point. And if you follow this plan step by step, and have your first meeting, follow the necessary things for your first meetings, your second meeting, and your third meeting. By the time you hit your third meeting, you'll be ready to talk with the sheriff, and that's when you make first contact. First contact. Basically, you should try to meet with the sheriff maybe in his office, let him know who you are, give him a copy of the paperwork that we talked about, putting it together. You put it in a nice booklet form, very professional. You have a seal on it, an address, a phone number, contact individual, the chairman, and or the secretary, or however you want to set that up. And now you invite him or her to the next meeting, which should be your fourth meeting. It could be done maybe quicker if you do your organizing well enough and get it done in the first two meetings. And again, you know, I'm thinking having a meeting once a month. And in the beginning, we have an emergency going on here in this nation. People need to step up and take control, and we don't have much time to do it. So everybody needs to get involved and do it now. But the bottom line is, time is of the essence, and we might want to have a meeting every week or two, and you can do it within a month. You'll be ready to meet up with the sheriff once you get organized. I'm planning to start now that New York has opened up, and you know masks aren't a requirement anymore here, and we're going to now try to get a venue for a large meeting. Hopefully it'll be a large meeting. And in that meeting, we will be inviting people in counties next door or counties across the state. And in some cases, there's counties maybe close to, Connecticut's not too far from us, Jersey's not too far from us, and certain parts of Pennsylvania isn't too far from us. So people from those areas want to come to our meeting for that first meeting, because our meeting is really going to be about organizing many counties. And we're going to be touring our state. I'm thinking of maybe doing five or six meetings in strategic areas across New York State, maybe more if necessary, and try to get all of the counties involved and to spark up their own committees of safety and start organizing and working together. Because only then can we take this republic back? Can we restore a republic? If we refuse to do this, if we don't do this, we're going to lose our republic. The people must be involved, and the people must be active. People must be educated. You need to know what you're talking about when you talk to the sheriff, and bring the knowledge of the Constitution to the sheriff. And we have a sheriff's book too. Which you can download as a PDF, and that should be part of the package when you give your copy of your charter and your resolutions to the sheriff. Also with that should be the sheriff's handbook, and that's a pretty big book too, if I recall it. The sheriff's handbook. Let's see, it's 60 pages, and again, in your first month that you're coming together, your first meeting, you should take a collection. And buy the book, Government by Consent. It's $44, or it's $50 delivered. Everything, shipping and handling is $50, and the book. And get a copy for the sheriff. And everyone should get a copy of it. But anyway, get a copy for your sheriff. And you want to get that book to the sheriff. We will send that book out. If you pay for a book for your sheriff, but we will ship it directly from National Liberty Alliance, and it will be addressed to the sheriff by another sheriff. And that's key, sheriff to sheriff, introducing that book and priming that sheriff for the upcoming meeting. And when that book goes out, you know, we'll put another letter in there, maybe a very short, maybe one paragraph, letting it be known that committees of safety are being created in all 3,134 counties, and that at some point soon the committee of safety in your local area will be making contact with you. So now you've got a sheriff that's primed, okay, and you work your program, get it together, whether you do it in a month, by three or four meetings in a month, or you do it every 2 weeks or even once a month. However you form the committees, you got to get at least three meetings going to accomplish all of the goals necessary to be prepared to now go see the sheriff. And the sheriff now is primed with a book, and now you're going to give him some really put together and thought out information, about who you are as a group, and invite them to a meeting. And we should expect that the sheriff or one of his deputies should be coming to a meeting every month. Okay, it should be a monthly meeting. You can have more than that, but to really get going. But you should ask the sheriff if he would come, or maybe send one of his deputies to come once a month. And then we have a plan to approach all local government. Okay, and once you have the sheriff is the first one you approach. You get him on board, because once he's on board now, you've got a little more clout, because the sheriff's working with you. He understands who you are, what you're doing, and he's also now becoming constitutional, which most sheriffs are not, because they don't know how to be constitutional. They don't know the Constitution. They were never trained in the Constitution. So, you then start approaching other local governments. You might want to do the county first, approach the county government, or you might want to approach town and city governments first. I know in my county, for instance, we have 19. I think it's 19 towns and two cities in my county, Dutchess County. So we have two cities and 19 towns, and within those towns, we also have villages. And we should be approaching all of those governments. Okay, all of those local governments. Letting them know, getting together the information also. Matter of fact, I didn't think about writing a book for local governments, so we'll try to put together a book for local governments to express to them their duty in the Constitution also. So you can then give them a copy of your resolutions and a copy of your charter and a copy of a book that assists them in understanding the Constitution. And put this package together and invite them to also, of course they probably all can't make it, but look at everyone within certain government, whether it's a town, someone should attend that meeting. And remember, at that point now, you're taking control of these people because we the people ordained and established this Constitution for them. And they need to be obedient to us, and they need to understand that the people are stepping up to take back control. And that's what we need to do. And if we fail to do that, then liberty is not for you. Any other questions, Jan?
Oh, yes. Next question. I declined to take the administered vaccine in my state of Nevada offered by Clark County entities. I've been hearing conversations about employees might have to present their vaccination card to their employer, in my case, Clark County. I do not feel comfortable taking these vaccines due to it being so new. Can you assist me with any advice as far as my rights and not to be forced to take the vaccine in order to keep my job? My only means to support myself if the conversation comes up.
Well, I'm sure everybody realizes how the government is trying so hard to get everybody to take these vaccines. Why are they pushing so hard to do this? When in fact, the 3 million deaths that was reported, 5% of that is true, which is about 150,000 deaths, which is far less than any year for, you know, the regular flu. And it, we haven't even heard reports about anybody dying from the flu, so a lot of these people may have died from the flu, not just necessarily, you know, this COVID-19 thing. But 150,000 people have died from, you know, exposure, so they claim, to the COVID-19. And the fact of the matter is more people are now dying of this vaccine than people who are dying of the flu. And it changes your RNA. And the RNA is the function within the body that communicates from the DNA to communicate to areas of your body that need repair or protection in the sense of resistance. And this RNA change is only given a battle against this particular virus, which is, of course, COVID-19. But it destroys your RNA to deal with any other illness, and even dealing with some kind of resistance, just as a resistant against the common cold. It destroys that within your body. Life expectancy after you get the vaccine is between 2 to 5 years. And this is not being made up. This is serious business. We're talking about people who are involved in this thing, talking about this, blowing the whistle, so to speak. We're talking about an individual who was the vice president of one of these companies that produced this. I forget which company it was, but they produced this particular vaccine, and he was the vice president and chief science officer. And he's out there speaking against this, and he's the one who's talking and teaching about the RNA destruction and how it's destroying our immune system. This is population control. That's what's going on. This isn't just in America. This is worldwide. A lot of people who may not realize, and, you know, I don't know how many people are new to what's going on, but the New World Order is out there, and it's real. It's a conspiracy, but it's not a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy, and it's real. And it's been going on for almost 200 years to destroy America from the very beginning. And the American Bar Association is the leader of destroyer of our republic. And lawyers control everything. They control the medical system. They control our judicial system. They control the judges who gets in to be judges. They control our legislators. The laws are written by all these American Bar lawyers. They control our government at every single level. There's over 80,000 lawyers in Washington, D.C. alone. Just think about that, 80,000 lawyers in Washington, D.C. alone. And they're the ones responsible for writing, the necessary legislation to destroy our republic. They're the ones that wrote the rules of the judicial rules, the rules of the court, and they are responsible for writing just about all the legislation. How often have we heard where Congress will have to vote on bills that they never read? And you can read it. You can read it later. Wait a second. Isn't Congress supposed to be writing the bills? Who's writing these bills? Well, it's the New World Order behind the scenes. And we are in deep trouble for those who don't realize this. I believe most people that here at National Liberty Alliance coming to our meetings, they know all this, but maybe we have some new people who aren't aware of this, how serious this is. And because Trump destroyed their whole system, they're in a panic now, and they're moving light speed. And that's why people are starting to see there's something wrong, really, really wrong. People who have been asleep for a long time are waking up and coming to realize that something's wrong. And so they're moving in light speed. President Trump made some statements over the weekend in an interview. And one of the things he said was, something needs to be done. and 2022, it'll be too late. It will not be able to be undone, what they are doing. Something needs to be done. And prior to that, he says, the best is yet to come. He also said that he's going to start campaigning again. He's going to go out talking to the people and get rallies going again. And those rallies, a lot of those rallies are going to be all about revealing what's going on. And he's kind of operating as if he appears from the outside, but we all know that he's still working on the inside, and he's working with the military. And it's only a matter of time, only a matter of time. And as he said, something needs to be done, and it needs to be done soon. In 2022, it will be too late, and we will not be able to undo what they are doing right now. And part of this whole thing is to kill off as many people as they can. You know, the New World Order plan, and many of us know, I think it's 800 million people they want to get the whole world down. There's about 7.5 billion people, I think, or roughly, a billion people. That's the population of the entire world. And they believe, they feel that that's too many people. We got to get rid of a lot of these people. So they're killing us off, and this is the way they're doing it. And there's other ways they're going to do it and, or try to do it. And it kind of sounds insane, but it is what it is. And just open your eyes and see what they're doing and try to figure it out. And you'll piece together the puzzle as time goes on when you realize that this is what's happening. So, okay, next question, Jan.
Okay, last Tuesday, after the meeting Monday night, I was going through emails, and I found this one from 9:56 Monday night. And it's from a fellow that's been a member a little over a week. And he says, why is my question about Trump and his connection to Jews that are dishonest and Zionist being ignored? So I went back further on 9:23 p.m., he sent an email that said, why are you so sure Trump is a good president? I study Judaism and Zionism, and I am completely opposed to what Trump did for Israel. Trump was married to two Jewish women. His children are Jewish. He is surrounded by Jewish lawyers. And his buddy was Beto Island Epstein, Mossad operative that was blackmailing our politicians. I don't trust Trump at all. Considering the above, why are you so excited to see him restored to president?
Well, look, you can tell a person by their words and their consistency over time. And that really is the real test. I'm very much aware of Trump for a very, very long time. I mean, long before he ran for president, because I live in New York. I lived in New York City. And everybody knows Trump down in New York City. And so I'm very aware of who he is and what he's been doing. I've also heard him talk so many times over the years concerning the problems in government, and he really didn't ever want to run for office. But he said he would support some people that would run for office to try to fix the problems. And the problems we are facing today, he spoke about 30, 40 years ago. And nothing has changed in Trump. He's been very, very consistent. And he also is not one of them. Even though he's a billionaire and he rubs shoulders with them business-wise and a little bit socially, he's not friendly with those people. He's more friendly with the regular people. And he's involved in his business. And when he ran for president, and especially his inauguration speech, was just a mind-blower. Anybody wants to know what Trump is all about, go back and listen to his, 2017 inauguration speech, okay, and it'll tell you what Trump is all about. He laid out everything in that speech, and he's made many speeches since, and he is consistent. He hasn't ended. I don't get into this Jewish thing or anything, and I know there is a problem with the Zionists, no doubt about that. They're destructive. They're part of the New World Order. But the people of Israel, the Jews, whether they're in Israel or whether in the United States or any other place, they're people just like we, the people here in America. You know, a lot of people in different countries, especially you go into the Middle East, they despise America because they see us as being evil. We're not evil. The people aren't evil. It's our government that has seized, people within our government that has seized control of our government are evil. They are the ones starting all of these wars and starting all of this destruction and destroying republics. They're the ones that are building democracies for the past 40 or 50 years, probably a little more than 50 or 60 years. They've been building democracies. The purpose of democracy is to build an oligarchy. That's what democracy is all about. Our founding fathers said they've never seen a democracy that doesn't commit suicide and kill itself at the end of the day. It only becomes part of some kind of a communist or Marxist. And that's what we're seeing, communist and Marxist moving through this our government. So we need to be very, very careful when we talk about a group of people, okay? You can't go up against the Jews and say, oh, Jews are bad or something. That's pretty bad to think like that. Bear in mind, there are great people trying to do right things, and there are evil things that have taken control of not just Israel, but of the United States. Because, again, to the people of the Middle East, we are evil. And yet, it's not we the people. And so the extremists, I think they see all Americans as evil, just like the individual who wrote this letter. They see all Jews as being evil. Nothing could be further from the truth. And we need to be very, very careful on speaking on things like that. But again, when it comes to Trump, he has never let me down. I've listened to he has accomplished every goal he swore. He has indeed made America great again. Of course, in the past 130 or 40 days or so, it's being destroyed and undone. But it really isn't, because that's all part of the plan, too. The people need to see. The people need to suffer. They need to get off their fat rear ends and start doing something. They need to start fearing what they're seeing and say, so that when the time comes to take it back, that they're bold enough to step up and work with us to take this nation back and to bring it back onto their feet, onto its feet, and to start to organize and bring together these committees of safety so that we can have government by consent again. I am absolutely convinced that Trump is a good guy. Just look at his life. I mean, look at how they've tried to destroy him. Why did he work so hard to destroy him? And you still now want to destroy him. They still want to arrest him. They want to get rid of him because he's a problem to them. Again, he has been very, very consistent. Very consistent. So I guess that's all I got to say about that. Let us be careful on how we talk about people. You can't put everyone into one basket and say they're all bad eggs. You just can't do that. Next question.
Okay. The same person had an additional comment and question. I see you have a spot where one can get help filling out paperwork for an action at law using the common law system. But do you have any history of actions at law undertaken and the results?
Well, we have had a few successes, small successes, but we've had some successes where judges did the right thing because of our paperwork. We've done amicus curiae for many different kinds of cases, particularly non-judicial foreclosures and habeas corpuses. But generally speaking, most of them know they've ignored this, and we've indicted them. All the judges that have ignored the people, when we reveal to them that they're becoming part, that they're involved in part of a crime and that they need to start doing the right thing and people need to be getting, due process and people's homes need to be, if they're going to take someone's home away, you need to do it lawfully, not through non-judicial foreclosures, which is exactly what they're doing. But our key thing is also recording all this, because all of this is part of the conviction against them. It's a nail in their coffin. And all the paperwork, and we filed many papers, hundreds of papers, literally hundreds of papers we have filed in the United States Supreme Court, convicting them and giving them that opportunity, offering them that opportunity to kind of repent, to give them the olive branch, to do the right thing. And they have failed. the United States Supreme Court is guilty of treason. I wouldn't say every single one of them, because three of them stood up to try to hear all this problem with the robbing of the election. And but time's going to tell, and I do believe those three judges are good judges, and they're kind of stuck in a situation here. But as far as the rest of them, I haven't met a federal judge yet, and there's a lot of them. We've been in courts. I haven't met a federal judge yet that is upholding the law. They're all criminals. They all are subverting the Constitution. They all deny due process. They all uphold civil law, which is Babylonian law. No difference. Civil law and Babylonian law is one and the same. It's to control the people. We are under natural law, and we are not to be under any other law but natural law. We the people need to get up and do something about this. We need to take it back. National Liberty Alliance has a plan. We've laid it out. We've talked about all these books. People need to be getting down. They're all free. Go download the books, okay, and all of these handbooks. And start building committees of safety. Start taking control from the bottom up. Because once you take control of your entire county, all the governments with your counties, and the other counties are doing the same thing, then we've taken control not only of the counties, not only of the towns and the villages, but we've taken control of the state. And when all the states have done it, the same thing, we've taken control of the federal government. And we've taken control of our court system, where the people are in control, and not these political animals that have agendas and are being paid off and just filling their pockets. So, anyway, next question.
Okay. John mentioned to me that there were two questions that the IRS had to ask the government, but not allowed to do so. I didn't have anything to write those two questions down and for him to send them to me by email. Would appreciate it. I've been getting letters in the mail that look like IRS government documents, which I'm pretty sure that they're fake, but just interested in knowing those two questions for real retaliation if one of them would be real. I would like to be ready. Any idea what he's referring to, John?
Yeah. Okay. Under education on our website, there is a page. I do believe you have to be a premium member to get to this page, and a premium member is someone who's given us $5 a month or more. So $60 a year. You give up a cup of coffee and a donut or something once a month, and voila, you're in. And of course, if anybody is really that broke that they can't afford the $5 a month, we'll let them in anyway. But on this page here, court forms, process, and instructions, we have a lot of information on procedures of the court and different forms that people can use, instructions and forms of challenge jurisdiction, instructions and forms to move your case for cause into the federal court, instructions and forms to file a habeas corpus, move in the court for enforcement, notice and demands, and various other downloads and memorandums that people can use, and certain landmark Supreme Court cases that people should know about and read, because they a lot of good information in these particular cases. And one of the things I have not put up here is how to deal with the IRS. I think I'm ready to do that. So maybe in the next week or two I'll post something up here. But here's some of the key things about the IRS. If you go down, when you get any kind of information about from the IRS, they'll give you codes. And if you go down the rabbit holes of these codes, by reading the code, go read the code, okay? And look at the key words in the code, and it will refer to other code numbers and other code numbers. And as you start to go down that rabbit hole, you start to discover that the IRS has no power or authority. It's unbelievable that lawyers can't even see this, okay? They're not trained to see it anyway. But if they did actually read and actually thought for themselves and they read this stuff and looked down it, they'd realize, wait a second, the IRS has no power and authority to collect anything off the people. First of all, it's a direct tax, and that's unconstitutional. The Constitution is clear that there isn't to be no direct tax. So that's number one. Number two, what they do is they give you what's called a notice of lien. And that's fraud right there, okay? And the fact that they're using the mail to do it, okay, I think that requires something like a 10-year jail sentence for using the mail to commit fraud. And I'm not sure exactly what that is, but it's pretty hefty, a jail sentence. So they're using the mail to commit their fraud to begin with. And they're lying to you. They're telling you that they're when they go to the county and they file a notice of lien to the county, and then they serve that upon you. The county doesn't have that lien. They're just trusting that a lien exists somewhere. They're being notified of a lien. So to find that lien, you got to go to your federal district court. So wherever your federal district court is, in my case, I'm in the Southern District of New York, so that's where my court is. Excuse me. The jurisdiction is for the court that I'm in. And if you go down there and you talk with the clerks and you ask them for a copy of the lien, you can even show them the notice of lien, they'll go look it up and they'll tell you it doesn't exist. And I can guarantee you it doesn't exist because in order, it's an affidavit form. It's a required form that must be filed. They must file, first of all, they must file a notice of... with the notice of lien, they have to file the an affidavit of I forget what they call it. Maybe I can find that. Might be in. No, it's not here. I'll have to get this information up. But it's Form 56 and Form 4490. Let me just run Form 56. Okay, Internal Revenue Form 56. Okay, that's for fiduciary relationship. So there are two forms. One's Form 56 for fiduciary relationship. And that form has to be filed in order for them to go to your bank and get information from your bank because they have to have fiduciary authority. And that's an affidavit form. And that doesn't exist. They can't do that. They won't do that because they got to go to a judge, and the judge has got to... It's actually got to be a hearing, okay? And they got to file the papers with that, go through the process, and once it's filed, then they can go to your bank and try to get your monies. And even with that, you can still deny them and force them to give you due process. And again, that's another block for them. They just can't get past that. And if you notify, because when they notify the bank, the banks do one thing, is when the IRS notifies the bank that they're going forward with a lien or some or they want information on you, that bank has 7 days in order to give them that information. But they have to wait 7 days because that makes it lawful for them because I don't respond to that then and I don't respond within those 7 days, now they can give it over to them because that's their civil law. That's their, you know, their codes or regulations that they wrote. So if they, and of course that doesn't exist, all right? So if you write to the bank and file with the bank a notice in affidavit form warning them that you're not giving them any information to look at any of your papers, there needs to be a court order and I need to have due process to get that court order, no, do not give it to the IRS, then that prevents them from giving it to the IRS. Most banks will ignore that and give it to them anyway because they fear the IRS. And they're part of the process, and they're dumb, and they don't understand any of this anyway. So they'll give them the information. But that's something you could bring up in court because now that's fraud. That's more fraud, fraud on top of fraud on top of fraud. Now, the other form is the Form 4490, and that's what's called a proof of claim. Again, you just put this information in Form 4490, and you'll pull it up here. Here is a proof of claim IRS form 4490, which now they have to fill this paperwork out. This has to be filed in the court. This is what creates the lien. And so somebody has to swear that this is true. Okay? So they're coming out after you for $200,000. I tell you, they came out after me for something like a couple of hundred thousand dollars. And it all started off... right now it's about 150. No, it's just about 100,000. And then that started off $50, okay, which they claim somewhere, and they don't even tell me where they get that $50. And over the course of a few years, it grows to like $100,000. I mean, these people are ridiculous. They got to swear to that. to fill out that form. This is an affidavit. And it's got to be filed in the federal district court. And then they can now file a notice of lien, and they should attach copies of this notice of lien to that to file it in your county. They didn't do any of that. And once you bring that up in court, people start to get a little worried about it. But you have to really, really be pushy. If you end up in court, you're in a dangerous situation, a very dangerous position. The other thing, again, is going down the rabbit holes and writing the paperwork in order to reveal the fact that, hey, I'm not a taxpayer. This is what they say a taxpayer is, and I'm not it. And it has to do, ultimately, with fuels and tobacco and firearms. It has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with the people. It has to do with some commercial activities and farming activities. And and it's just written in confusing ways. But as you go down that rabbit hole, you start to puzzle the whole thing together and see what they're doing. It's just a facade. And it's just it's a paper tiger. It's nothing there. They don't want that revealed in the court. They don't want that on court record. And so, but that's where you got to fight it at. It is a dangerous fight. But I will tell you another thing. And, you know, the other thing is that when the IRS comes out after you, you must respond to every letter. They write a letter, you write a letter. And you keep your letters short, to the point, and to the focus, and you're asking for information. I don't understand. Where's your proof of claim? Where's your fiduciary authority? You want to do this or that with my banks? You want to get information? Well, you already did that. You didn't get fiduciary authority. You never gave me due process. That's unlawful. You know, but you respond back to these people. They send a letter, you send a letter. They send a letter, you send a letter. You have to respond to every single one of them. When you respond with an affidavit form. Whatever you say, just put it into an affidavit form, and that's how you're responding to them. Give them notice and demands. And again, you can go to a website to learn information on notice and demands. Let's see, where is that notice and demands? Didn't we have that? and let me open a notice and demand. On that page, you can go to get the notice and demands. It's under education. Come down to court forms, process, and instructions. And challenging jurisdiction, moving case, habeas corpus, enforcement. Oh, there it is. Notice and demand right here. Okay. You can get this in PDF form and in Microsoft Word, giving you instructions on how to write a notice and demand. What are the points within the notice demand? And we give you the layout of just doing this whole thing. All right. That's where you start off. When the IRS starts to bother you in the beginning, this is one of the ways you respond, with a notice and demand. You know, you got to give me the information. Okay. Now, every time you do that, you do it in an affidavit form, and you do it registered with return receipt. You know, the green card that they sign and you get back. Even if you do it, you can register it and go up online and to download the signature. You save a few bucks. You could do it that way too. But I did have a case where they didn't have signatures, and yet they got the papers and they couldn't get me signatures. So you're better off with the card. Spend the extra money to get the card. But you're building a case against them, okay? And your case begins with the notice and demand, because they're going to fail to respond to that notice and demand, and they'll continue to assault you, and you'll continue to answer them in affidavit form, certified return slip, green card. And you want to constantly bring up, you respond to what they're saying in these papers. I don't understand. What are you talking about? What money? You know, where is the money that you're talking about? And you know how they inflate everything. I mean, these people are sick. They really, really inflate this stuff. So, anyway, that's how you deal with them. I will put up here some papers on IRS in the very near future. I can't say I'm going to do it in a week or two, but I'll try to do it within the next couple of weeks. But we'll get it done. We'll get it up there. But you'll have to be a premier member to get access to it. And I'll just repeat that one more time. A premium member is someone who is giving $5 a month or more. And everybody should be giving National Liberty Alliance $5 a month or more. Everyone can afford. But that's why we did it so low. Everyone can afford $5. Very few people can't. We need money to survive and do things. So, hey, you know, I'm going to be more involved and write more papers. Well, I got most of these papers written. I just got to put them together in a way and go through them and maybe update them if they need updating, but you know, put it together and get it up there on that page. So how to deal with the IRS. I'll do some stuff on that. Okay, next question.
Yeah, this one kind of merges into the one you just answered, John. It says, where can I find legal help to fix an IRS notice of lien if it's incorrectly recorded by the New York City Manhattan City Register's office, blah, 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 New York as a lien?
Yeah, because you got to go to the federal district court and see that it doesn't exist. And then, you know, you can go down to the, I would do, and I didn't think of this before, but if they did it to me again, I would go down to my county and I'd put them on notice and let it be known that you're now getting involved in criminal activity here and fraud because no lien exists. Now, if you go down to the court and you ask them to give you a paper stating that there is no lien, 9 times out of 10, the clerk won't do it. But that 1 time out of 10, the clerk might do it. And if they do it, now you go down to your county with that letter. Now, if they don't do it, you can write a paper to the clerk down in the court the jurisdiction, the federal jurisdiction court that you know is that you're living in, and you can do a paper to them demanding information concerning the fact that there is no lien and that you've been. You can even do an affidavit and give it to the county clerk and file it there that you went down to the federal district court and no such lien exists, and you spoke to the clerk on a certain day in a certain time, do it in an affidavit form, file it with the county clerk, and then you file it with the sheriff, and you let it be known. Because I sued them all to prevent them from acting. But I should have done this first, though. To let it be known, hey, look, this doesn't exist. This whole thing's a fraud. And if you go forward, Mr. or Mrs. Clerk, or you go forward, Mr. or Mrs. Sheriff, and you go forward to start assaulting me to work with them, you become part of that crime, and I'm going after you, too. That's how I would deal with it. I'd be a lot nicer with the sheriff, of course, but that's how I would deal with it. But what I did do when they did this, in order to prevent them from seizing my assets, is I immediately sued the sheriff, and I immediately sued the county, and I immediately sued all of the agents involved from day one all the way through, a whole group of people, and I also sued the commissioner of the IRS. And that put them all on hold. And now they couldn't really do much, and I took them to court. And it's best to take them to court before they get you to court. You know, so you want to really try to get the upper hand with these people because they will steamroll you and they will destroy you. But there is good news. I don't know if I said this, but I think I might have, but there's good news. The IRS is not going to be around very much longer. They're on their way out, okay? As soon as things start moving to take this nation back to make for the better things to happen, you know, as Trump is saying, something needs to be done, and it needs to be done now, and we cannot wait to 2022 to do it. That's the words of Trump just over this weekend, and you can take his words to the bank. He promised when he was in office, and I do believe he's still in office, he promised that when he was in office that he would not allow this nation to turn Marxist, because that's where we're heading, and communist. That's where we're heading. He promised it wouldn't happen. And he definitely is a man of his word. He's definitely a man that keeps his promises. He's looked at all the work. We have a page. Let me see where this is. We have a page of all the things that Trump did in office. Okay? Jen, do you know where that page is? Or let me see if I could find that real quick. Oh, wait a second. I think it's down here under maybe political issues. Trump, yeah, here it is. Under political issues, Trump administration accomplishments. Okay? Tell me this man is the enemy. This is the accomplishments that he made during his administration in his first 4 years. Okay? No president has ever accomplished so much as President Trump done. I'm going to let that roll. It's going to roll for quite some time. It's huge, okay? It is big. So, the best is yet to come, I'm convinced. As a matter of fact, well, next week I might do something a little special. I've been thinking about it. I might do something a little special. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Anyway, next question, Jim.
Okay. This is still on the IRS stuff. It says...
Okay. By the way, the page is still scrolling for anyone who's not seeing this. We got a page scrolling with all of the accomplishments of Trump. And it's scrolling pretty fast. I mean, and we're not even halfway down the page yet. Go ahead, Jim.
I sent the affidavit that Jim helped me with, IRS Form 4490, Proof of Claim, and Form 56, Fiduciary Relationship. It was recommended by Brent Johnson at freedomradio.us that I send a UCC-2 request for information to Albany to see if the federal tax lien comes back to me on the form. If it does not, that means it was incorrectly recorded in New York. Also, Brent recommended I send a FOIA request to the IRS for the same forms requested on the affidavit.
That's a good idea. I never thought of the FOIA. FOIA,
yeah, and
the
Form 56.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I like that. I didn't think of that one either. Yeah. But go ahead.
That's the end of the question.
Okay.
Of that question.
Okay, so, well, I think I pretty much answered all of that.
Yeah, I think so. Let's see.
By the way, the page is still scrolling for anyone who can't see the page. For those who are watching the page, this is impressive what he has done. And you can't call this man the enemy. You just can't. Okay, Jen, what do we have any other questions?
We have one more. Rather.
By the way, is Gerard in? Is Brent in today?
I haven't seen Gerard yet.
Yeah.
I have a rather complex question on the application of a writ of quanto for the following in my state. When I look at the law dictionary, the maladministration word is there, blah, 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 blah. I don't think we want to go into this, John. It's about a page and a half of definition.
Yeah, and whoever wrote that, maybe they can write something a little shorter.
Yeah, we can maybe shorten it down to where it's reasonable.
By the way, the page is still scrolling for anyone who's not doesn't have a browser to see what's going on.
So that was
the final one?
That wraps them up, John.
All right. I guess we'll move over to Brent. Let's keep an eye out for Gerard to see if he comes in tonight. By the way, the page just ended scrolling, so that was a lot of information. Anybody want to read that? Again, all you have to do is go to nationallibertyalliance.org. Highlight people's duty, come down to political issues, and you'll find it in a list, the second one under political issues, which says Trump administration's accomplishments. And the best is yet to come. Okay, let's move over to Brent. Are you ready, Brent? Can you unmute yourself? I think Brent muted himself. Can you unmute him, Jan?
I just unmuted.
Oh, yeah, there he is. He's unmuted. Can you hear me, Brent?
Clear as crystal, John.
Okay, we're going to move over to Brent Winters, and he is the author of the book The Excellence of the Common Law and numerous other books and handbooks. And his website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic. And after that, after Brent's finished, we're going to do an open forum. Go ahead, Brent.
All right. Thank you. This is Brent. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. And a little louder. I got a signal. I'm going to try it. I'll talk louder. Hope I hold out. Let's talk a little bit about the character of the common lawyer. The character of the common lawyer. There's only two kinds of lawyers in the world. There are common lawyers called historically commoners. Commoners. And there are civil law lawyers called civilians. The word civilian comes from the name for lawyers in civil law countries. They're called civilians. And common lawyers are called commoners for short. Not anymore, but historically that has been true. And what I want to focus on here is why, and you'd be thinking about this as I go through this information, why there are private bar associations in America. There's a historic reason for it. And if we understand the nature of lawyers in common law countries, where they came from, why they're here, well, that would make a lot of difference. It might be good to mention at the onset that the problem in ancient England and the reason that common law lawyers arose was because when the Normans arrived in England in 1066, they were Norwegians that had settled on the coast of France at a place that came to be called Normandy. Remember, that's where that big invasion was in World War II. Well, it was called Normandy on the coast of France because the Norwegians had conquered it back in the 900s. And they had been there long enough, they picked up the French tongue. They no longer spoke Norwegian. And they spoke a dialect of French that was bastardized. They called it, or the French called it, bastardized French. They still do, by the way. And that makes up the bulk of the words, the foreign words in our common law tradition that are still used in our courts. Let's see what this one fellow says. This is a book he wrote back in 1925 called Chief Sources of English Legal History. Percy Winfield, he said this, that law French was barbarous in its decrepitude does not in the least diminish the value of it to our law when it was in full vitality. I'll read that again. He said, law French was barbarous in its decrepitude, but that does not in the least diminish the value of it to our common law when it was in full vitality. And I'm reading from section 3.10.1 of the book Excellence of the Common Law, comparative law text available at Amazon.com and at commonlawyer.com, called Excellence of the Common Law. I'm reading. The French tongue, upon taking into its terms the concepts of the common law, flourished with life abundant and waxed strong as law French. And following the Norman conquest of 1066, the Normans' already corrupt dialect of French became the official language of the English courts. Britain's insular isolation from France further ensured its corruption. Anglo-Saxon and Dane litigants before the courts begin admixing their tongues with the Norman French, and the English lawyers took perverse delight in mispronouncing the French words. Now that was Charles Round. Lawyers still take particular delight, if they have any sense, and mispronouncing the French words of our common law, and there are lots of them. We pronounce them like Americans and enjoy doing so. Anglo-Saxon and Dane litigants before the courts, Thus, over time, in England's courts, Norman French lost any trace of tame purity it may have retained after the Normans began using it. The English dubbed the enlivened offspring with the name Law French. Sometimes it's called Norman French. Sometimes it's called Law French. And the tongues of men never dead were spoken are as alive as those speaking them. And within a century and a half of the Normans taking control of the common law courts in England, the force of the mixed Anglo-Saxon and Danish tongues, later called English, begin its re-entry into the courts and government, recapturing preeminence. And by the year 1362, say 196 years after the Norman invasion, the year 1362, the common law courts, recognizing the natural power of the English tongue in the courts, forbade the use of law French anymore. And the following year, the year 1363, Parliament, for the first time, opened its session with a speech in Anglo-Saxon. And by the year 1362, the English bar had stopped speaking law French, even among themselves. Law French, nevertheless, persisted as a kind of legal shorthand. English lawyers, though never fluently speaking law French, continued use of key law French terms. And during the years 1066 until about the year 1366, the precise meanings of common law concepts had become inextricably bound and inextricable from the legal weave of Norman French words. Law French survives in ancient documents, but after the year 1372, claims Baker, the only French heard in the English courts was the oyes of the crier. Baker, however, overstates his case. Common law courts still use law French terms, spoken and written. For example, many of the following law French words are known to lawyer and non-lawyer alike. And here we go. The word plaintiff, the word brief, B-R-I-E-F, the word lien, you've heard that, the word alienation, the word estoppel, escheat, escheat, cypress, seticius, that's the name for the common law trust, seigneur, season, de-season, livery of season, ouster, distraint, distrainer, dehors, that's a funny word, sergeant, mens rea, actus reus, per alter vii, petit, as in petit jury, constraint, in limine motion, chattel, kidnap, demur, and defeasance, to cite a few, are Norman French words. Some of the foregoing law French terms, such as brief, plaintiff, and kidnap, have become common English. Other words thought to be French, and often from Latin or even regular French roots, such as the word appeal, for example, though traced to the language of the ancient Franks, is neither a Norman French nor a law French word. As did the earlier common lawyers, present-day common lawyers still mispronounce the law French, though seldom, as did their forerunners, on purpose and with perverse delight. Well, that's the language that crept into our common law, and that's why you see all those funny words. You don't know what they mean. They sound foreign to you. That's because they are. The character of the common lawyer. Let me quote another fellow here. Sir Francis Bacon said this, "The virtue of prosperity is temperance, and the virtue of adversity is fortitude. For prosperity doth best discover vice, but adversity doth best discover virtue." And that is a fundamental of our common law tradition. Somebody recognize that. Well, before the 14th century, common lawyers called themselves serventes ad legem. That means, it's a Latin word, that means servants at law. Servants at law. Then, during the 14th century, about the time common law courts stopped using law French, common lawyers began to call themselves by the English term for feudal sergeantry, namely, sergeants at law. Sergeants at law. The term serventes ad lux, which is Latin for feudal sovereignty, feudal sergeantry, sergeants at law is English, serventes, like servant, ad lux, that means the same thing in Latin, was a title of honor denoting personal service rendered in the presence of the king. Thus, a holding of land tenure for exchange of a specific personal service that the holder must render direct and only to the king. Common lawyers then replaced the Latin serventes ad lux with English, sergeants, and replaced serventes, servant, at, replaced ad, with or toward, and law, replaced lex, for king. Thus did the title sergeant at law well, one personal service to the king, and for example, was honorary, such as bearing a sword and armor or serving as his champion in battle. Likewise, the sergeant at law's duty and loyalty was personal and honorary, but to the majesty of the common law. In addition, this is why modern common lawyers refer to litigation in common law courts as an action at law. Law being the abbreviated term for common law, and the prepositional phrase at law meaning in the personal presence of the law's majesty. And just as serventes ad lex meant in the personal presence of the king's majesty. Moreover, the title sergeant at law, by that title common lawyers intended to contrast themselves with the Roman priests serving as civil law proctors, advocates, and judges. The Roman priest, by their oath, had sworn to render their direct loyalty and service to the Pope of Rome, whereas the common lawyer's oath, loyalty, and service were direct to the common law. Unlike the loyalty of the Roman priest and the civil servant, which was to a government of a single will, whether pope, bishop, king, emperor, or any combination of men, the common lawyer's oath was to the law. And that spelled the difference. I remember reading about a young German soldier who was in Hitler's youth before the war, and he described signing up for the army, the German army, and he took an oath to obey all orders that Hitler gave. His loyalty was to a mere mortal man, wound up and bound up in his own whims and difficulties. His name was Adolf Hitler. We don't do that in America because we're a common law country. When people swear an oath of loyalty, they swear an oath of loyalty to law. The oath is to law. Well, common lawyers were to have undivided loyalty to the principles of our common law. See, we still do the same thing, in essence, here in America. Every person filling the ranks of our armed forces, every person filling an office of government, state or federal, every person becoming a lawyer licensed to practice law to represent others takes the same oath, the same substantively same oath to law, the law of the land. And that's our Constitution of the United States. It's the law of the land. That's different than the rest of the world. The rest of the world takes an oath of loyalty to a person. Well, only sergeants of law, those are common lawyers, remember, only sergeants at law held the title order of the coif, the sign of right to appear for their clients, on behalf of their clients, in the royal court. A candidate's entry into this order required approval of the Chief Justice of the Court of Common Pleas, and the chief badge of the authority bestowed by the order of the coif was a tight-fitting skull cap worn on only the head, in symbolic deference to the order's loyalty to the common law, recognizing that the common lawyer's service was direct to the common law, not to the person of the king. English kings allowed the members of the Order of the Coif, a COIF, to wear these skull caps in their presence until the year 1553, as did the monks. Sergeants at law rode mules instead of horses, and by their habits, customs, and lifestyle, the early sergeants of law, that's common lawyers, meant to show that their devotion to the common law was as strong as, if not stronger than, the priest's loyalty to the Roman pontiff. Therefore, by their title, sergeants at law, which means hand servants to the common law, and by their oath, common lawyers were foremost for the benefit of the people and not the state. And so sometimes, of course, they would actually agree, that two lawyers would agree, this is what the law says, and we follow the law. And the fight was over. Well, by the year 1600, the only way to gain eligibility for an appointment as judge in England's courts was to first become a sergeant at law. And I'm going to quit here. But recognize that the Inns of Court, formed to train common lawyers, was a private movement. It had nothing to do with the government. The government didn't provide any money to do it. And the decision was made, we've got to do something. So as a grassroots movement, they begin to show their clout. And that's what the American Bar Association has done here in America. It got big and powerful enough, it began to show its clout, and then it went crooked and south and began to promote communism. Things go to seed. Every organization has its time period when it might be worth something, and beyond that, it simply isn't. It becomes dangerous. I'll let you make your decision about sergeants at law. But sergeants at law ranked in England eventually over the centuries fell into rank below knights. Remember, a sergeant at law is a lawyer. He's a barrister, has a license, and the government began to recognize this person that operates outside the law. And that having happened, I'm going to conclude. I think I'm going to sleep. I'm walking dead here, but I'm getting pretty tired. I don't know if I'm making any sense. But this is Brent, Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, and my comments are my own. May or may not agree with the leadership of National Liberty Alliance, but they're nice enough to let me say a few words. But here's what I want to do. I want to finish this paragraph. I am tired, and I'm afraid I'm not making sense, but I think I can try to get this paragraph done and explain the word esquire. In the United States, I'm reading from the book Excellence of the Common Law. In the United States, some append the title esquire after the name of an American common lawyer as an abbreviated title of courtesy, abbreviated ESQ, period. The term so used, however, signifies neither class nor peerage. Moreover, the Constitution of the United States bars both the United States and any of the several states to grant any such title that may be a title of the peerage of nobility. In any event, the title esquire for a lawyer is a misapplication in light of history. English barristers did not hold that title. English barristers held the title sergeant and never held the title esquire. But I say again, the term esquire is equivalent to the word mister or master. I used to get letters when I was a boy from some older person. It would say on the envelope, I'd go to the mailbox when I was a little boy and I'd pull it out and it'd say Master Brent Allen Winters. And that was a common custom of respect for young men and boys, mister for men. If you held another profession as your calling, you could have the preacher was called reverend. These are not titles of nobility, and neither is the title esquire, but they are titles of respect. Back to John or Gerard, whoever's there.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. Appreciate it. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Is Gerard here, Jan? Has anyone seen him? I guess maybe Jan's away. Gerard, are you here? Okay. You got it, Terry. Okay, we'll go to the open forum here. We'll start taking questions. Brent, can you mute yourself, please?
Yes.
Okay, we'll take our first caller here. It's Barbara from New York. You got the mic, Barbara. Go right ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that the person from, I guess it was Nevada, who was asking about if you're being pressured by your employer. I just want to bring up that I had read that on May 10th that OSHA made an announcement that if your employer made the COVID shot a requirement of employment, that if you were had any kind of injury, that you were to report it as a work-related injury. And it said, and then they commented that the employer would be liable for injury or, you know, whatever results, financial results happen. So I don't know. That's something that I think is helpful if the employers know that. And also there's the whole U.S. Code 21 U.S. Code 360 BBB-31, which I'm using because I need to write a letter to get an exemption from a college for my son. And that rule there's a section in which it says if the FDA labels something as a emergency use authorization, which it does for the vaccine, the COVID test, and the mask, they have, and I've got copies of their papers. You can get them online. The FDA says this is an EUA, emergency use authorization product. So for the vaccine, it's emergency use authorization, and it says in the U.S. code that the person involved must be given the option to accept or decline. And so then if then you take that and you go to the code of federal regulations, and they explain what in much more detail about the informed consent and how informed consent must be without coercion or threat of removal of rights or threat of reprisal. So I don't know. I think that might be useful.
And that was USC 21, right?
Excuse me?
That was USC 21?
USC 21, 360 BBB-31, and it's the law for emergency use authorization products.
Emergency use authorization. Yeah, once you get the code, that particular a code up, the USC 21 up, all you have to do is just do a word search in there for emergency use, and you'll probably find the label emergency use authorization and all the information at that point. Good information. Appreciate that. I might write a paper on that and put it up for people to use as a form. Great idea.
it doesn't, you know, come right out say and say it's, you cannot mandate it, but it says you must give the person involved the option to accept or deny, and that's where it is. I mean, you can't really, that's clear enough, but you've got to, you know that it's there. And what do you think about Trump boasting about the vaccine through Warp Speed?
The vaccine he pushed for was not poison. And they've added this RNA change thing in there, and of course that is poison. I gotta believe he understands this at this point in time, but there is a plan, and it could fail if it's not done properly. You know, he has to execute things in according to certain things that must take place, and his plan is to reveal all of the subversion and to begin with the voting. And a lot more is going to come out at the same time. A lot of human trafficking involvement and many, many other things. So the plan has to continue. And I think right now we're in that point of process where the revealing of the votes. The bottom line I've heard is that he actually got over 400 electoral votes. And each one of those states are being revealed one at a time, and it should be pretty powerful. So, and that's the beginning of the end of these people. But at the same time, I've heard, and again, Q has laid this out, and at the same time, he refers to this as a movie that's going to be playing, and there's going to be three movies playing at the same time. So there's a lot more coming down the pike, and Trump is now ready to go out and start doing his campaigning again, his rallies, and he'll be driving the message home, because the regular media is not going to cover this, the alternative media will, and he'll be traveling, bringing the message to the people directly himself through rallies. I think his first rally is going to be huge. And many of his rallies that are huge, and many times the stadiums aren't even large enough to be able to accommodate all the people. So it's going to be interesting.
Why use Warp Speed when it's done through the Defense Department? And it takes away transparency.
Well, no, there was nothing wrong with they didn't really put a situation where they bypassed anything. First of all, this whole process, especially the federal government, it takes years to get things through a system. When if it was out in private, commerce out there, then things would get through a lot quicker than that because of the bureaucracy within the government. But there was nothing wrong with him pushing it forward and having numerous tests being done at the same time. If they did their job, and there are numerous different companies out there, and I don't know if any of the companies have a vaccine that doesn't deal with this RNA change. That's the big problem. Is they made it evil. That wasn't part of the vaccine. It's not like it was a mistake because it went too quickly. But all this is going to come to light, and we'll get to a better understanding of what's going on there. But Trump cannot move or do anything until certain things happen. And it can't be him that actually does it. It's got to be the military. The military is the only one that can deal with this problem. And the military is investigating this fraud on the votes. And they've been watching, long before the election took place. Trump had said the election is secure. We already got it all. And the Space Force, which brings technology into space, and it's been in effect now a couple of years, all of that probably connects with a lot of information, especially the satellite information that everything that took place. They can, even if they erase the databases and removed information from certain places, I believe they still have that information. But even the database that they actually removed, they deleted, they were able to recover it, because you really can't erase anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. But I look at the truth will be revealed, and we'll have a better understanding. You know, to be, tell you the truth, and I think about this often. I can't wait till the movie comes out. Because when this is all said and done, you know all of this is being documented, and this is going to play for a great movie, and people need to know it. It's got to be really a documented movie. It's going to be interesting to know what really has been going on behind the scenes in the past 4+ years, and revealing all of the evil that has been taking place by these people who have taken control of our government. So,
yeah,
it's going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah. So, okay.
Anything else?
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Appreciate it. That was good information. Okay. Okay, we'll take our next caller here, Ross from Oregon, it looks. Ross? You got the mic. Ross, can you hear me? Did we lose Ross? Okay, I guess Ross is gone. I don't see him anywhere at this point. We'll take our next caller, Melissa from Ohio. You got the mic, Melissa.
Hello.
Hello.
I apologize. I just today have discovered your website trying to find an organic copy of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little green here. Mm-hmm. I've only had a few hours to kind of check things out. I've listened and been taking notes. I have been reading a lot on the AmericanStatesAssembly.net, so I kind of feel like I sort of understand what the process is that we, the people, are trying to do. But can you give someone like me kind of some sort of direction as to, like, actually, where is my starting point?
Well,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the starting point really to try to take back this nation and bring things back under the control, which is what the people have to do. You know, I do believe that everything is set up to take this nation back and give it back to the people, but the people have to receive it. And if the people don't receive it, and the people don't know how to have government by consent, and they don't know how to control these things, and they don't have the knowledge of the Constitution, the knowledge of the process and procedures, particularly in the courts, the political process, and how all this is done, if they don't have that knowledge, then what are they going to do? They can't do anything. I listen to a lot of different people talk on the different programs. Hopefully we'll be interviewed on some of these programs to give the people something to do. But they're always talking about people got to get involved. They got to get up. Can you mute yourself while we're talking, Melissa, because we're getting someone in the background talking.
There's no one here in the background. No? Probably.
Okay, well, what I want to do is I'm going to mute you while I'm talking, and then I'll unmute you, okay? So, because there's feedback coming through your mic. So I'll mute you for just a minute or two. Where was I? I lost my train of thought. Where were we? We were talking about, okay, the process, where to start, I guess. Maybe I'll repeat myself a little bit. But really the people have to receive the knowledge and the information to be able to perform the necessary duties that is the people's duty. If the people do not step up and get educated in these processes in order to take back control of their nation, then you can't have government by consent. You can't have republic. The republic, the liberty of this republic is not for you, and you can't have it. Only a people who are, you know, first of all, we have to be a humble people. We have to, bend our knee to the Creator, because that's where it all starts. A Declaration of Independence is a covenant with God. It's a covenant with our Creator. Nature's God, and so that's where it all starts. And people have to have this knowledge, so they have to know the Declaration of Independence. They have to understand the Constitution, the structure of the Constitution, and And ultimately, you know, they have to understand, of course, their rights, particularly the Bill of Rights, which is, really a framework of our liberties, because there's a lot more to it than that. But what we did, if you go under People's Duty, I don't know if you're, let me see, are you in here on a, oh no, you're in here on a phone, it looks like. But on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, if you highlight People's Duty, you'll see Committee of Safety, and that's where you start. You click on that button, and that's where you start. And you start organizing committees of safety. This is what our founding fathers did to create this nation. This nation was created by committees of safety. As a matter of fact, in the very beginning, when the Pilgrims came over, so when we started to, you know, really people started to come to America, the committees of safety were formed in order to have some form of government and control. And so the people formed committees of safety. During, when we started to have problems with Britain, and our founding fathers formed committees of safety to take care of the services and the needs that the government that was supposed to be giving us and hadn't been given us, abusing us. So we could, you know, our founding fathers created the committees of safety to fulfill those needs. And it starts off with the militia, okay, to protect yourself, to protect the people, and so on. And through that process, they came together. They tried, of course, the First Continental Congress was trying to work things out with Britain, and that failed. So the Second Continental Congress came together in order to separate themselves, which is, the Declaration of Independence, which is the foundation of our founding documents. It's the foundation of America. It's the law, the common law right there in the Declaration of Independence, a covenant with God, that we should be, you know, that we had a desire to be under his law, and in return, being obedient to his law and under his law, to receive his blessings and thereby his liberties. And God blessed us with liberties. Our rights are unalienable. And so that's where it all begins, and upon that, of course, is the Constitution. But our founding fathers created the committees of safety in order to form that. They used the committees of safety to create a government after the separation, a temporary government through the process of the Revolutionary War and all the way into the process until the Constitution was written. Now, I heard you mention the organic Constitution, and I'm look at, there's people out there that claim that the 1787 Constitution was one Constitution, but we had the 1789 Constitution, which is a different Constitution. But nothing could be further from the truth. Pretty much word for word, I think literally word for word of the Constitution, whether it's the 87 was really completed, but it didn't take effect until 89. And so I don't know where these people are coming up with this idea that there's some kind of a organic constitution different from the one that sits in Washington, D.C. And that is not true at all. Now, it may be true that there are certain things added. That's a possibility. I don't know whether that's true or not, but there may have been certain things added in the Constitution, particularly when we look into the Constitution and we come to Article 1, Section 9 and Section 10. Let me see. Although, you know, I got to go into the Federalist Papers to see if this is a fact or not, and I haven't checked this out. Because if the debate and the argument is in the Federalist Papers, then the original Constitution was the same. But there may have been something added, and really the focus was a concern of government becoming too big, and a group of people led by Jefferson, particularly Jefferson and Madison, they worked in order to, and it was called the Anti-Federalists. And I don't think they were called the Federalists. I don't think they were called Anti-Federalists back then. I think eventually that name was given to them. But I'm not sure on that either. So they may have been called that. But I did know that Jefferson was trying to, attend to the wounds of the nation when he became elected president. And in the beginning of his acceptance speech, he started off and saying that we're all Republicans and we're all Federalists. He didn't want not want that division. The only thing with the anti-Federalists is that they were thinking that the Constitution, as it sat, gave too much power to the federal, to the government that they were creating, which is we see as the federal government. But the Bill of Rights really kind of cleaned that all up, because you can't violate our unalienable rights. And so we wrote a Bill of Rights, and anything, all the Constitution must be read in light of the Bill of Rights. So any legislation that might violate these particular rights would be null and void. And so that was another masterpiece created by Jefferson and Madison. They put that together. Jefferson was behind it, and he was away at the time overseas, and Madison was here. But they were communicating, collaborating on the problems that they had seen. Madison was reporting back to Jefferson what was going on, what was being, the papers and the discussions. And Jefferson was communicating with Madison, so they were collaborating on this. But when we get into, for instance, the article, Article 1, I think maybe Section 9, if there was anything added in that, it would have been in Section 9, where it talks about, for instance, the privilege of habeas corpus shall not be suspended, no bill of attainder or ex parte facto law shall be passed, no captation or other direct tax shall be laid. The direct tax, that's what people are paying. People are paying a payroll tax. People, your employer is paying a payroll tax, and you're paying a tax on your labor, and that's a slave tax, okay? And that's a direct tax. That's unlawful. That's in the Constitution under Article 1, Section 9. So again, I'm not too sure on some of these things, and there's other things in here that were put in here. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and that was added on, not only a title of nobility, but also a position of honor. And Brent was talking a little bit about this concerning the Esquire. The Esquire is a position of honor, sort of like the gentleman, and actually it's supposed to be one step above the gentleman. From what I understand, anyway. And but our founding fathers in 1818 or thereabouts wrote the 13th Amendment, and the 13th Amendment added in the positions of honor. And that disappeared in 1871 or 73. Right around when the Organic Act came about. But anyway, this particular idea of an organic constitution that was written in 1787 is the same constitution as 1789. Nothing different except for maybe a few changes on that, which is added protections, actually. But the key thing is an agreement on 12 Bill of Rights, which ended up being 10 Bill of Rights. They didn't take anything away, ultimately. Actually, they just fused together in 10 rights, but actually, 10 amendments, which actually had more rights than 10, though. I mean, you take even just the First Amendment, has quite a few different things in it that is freedom. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion. Okay, that's one. Or forbidding the free exercise thereof. Or abridging the freedoms of speech. That's another one. Or of the press, another one. Or of the rights of the people peaceably to assemble. That's another right. And to petition the government for redress of grievances. Again, another right. So right there, you've got four or five different rights within Amendment 1. But in any event, they did agree because some of our founding fathers, quite a few of them, as a matter of fact, refused to sign the Constitution unless they agreed to add a Bill of Rights. And they drew up a rough draft of that Bill of Rights, so they kind of had an idea of what was going to be in it. And my understanding is everything that they wanted to be put into it did come to play, and it came to effect, I believe, in 1791, which is when the Bill of Rights came into being. Let me see, 1791, December 15th, 1791. So, anyway, let me unmute you now, and you can respond back to any of that or ask another question.
It's my understanding that on the 4th of July, 2020, after Donald Trump gave his speech, Melania tweeted that she couldn't wait to get back to the White House so that Donald could sign the new Bill of Rights. I'm not positive where
I haven't heard anything like that, and that seems so out of character of everything I've heard and known about the Trump, so I wouldn't give that any merit. But you know, look at the Bill of Rights is written by the people. The Trump can't write the Bill of Rights. Congress can't write a Bill of Rights. They can't alter that document. They can't alter the document in which they can receive their power.
This not at the same time where he abolished the Corporation of the United States? Do you believe that happened?
I think it was exposed. I don't know that it has been abolished yet, but I think it's been exposed, and it will be gone. You know, look at, there is a shadow government, and many of the presidents, especially in our lifetime, really is problematic, and part of the New World Order. And each one of them were adding on to it, and some of them through ignorance, maybe, but some of them outright subversion and treason.
I watched a video a few weeks ago of General Flynn giving a speech. I'm pretty sure left with that. But a lady in the audience had stood up and asked the question, are we a republic? Are we, you know, he kind of like paused back and, you know, like you could tell he was kind of caught off guard by the question, but he said absolutely yes. We are, again, a republic.
Right. You know, again, even people who are, even, let me mute you while I talk because I keep getting this feedback, so hang on a minute. Yeah, you may be over-modulating. Are you on phone or what are you on?
No, I'm on my desktop.
Okay.
I'm on my desktop.
Yeah, probably you're over-modulating. Yeah, you're over-modulating through your mic. Let me just mute you, and then I'll unmute you when I finish talking at this. I already lost the point that I had to make on this. What was the question or the thought that you had brought up?
That I had seen a video of General Flynn giving a speech.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The woman in the audience had asked, were we a corporation or were we again a republic? He answered, we were a republic.
Right. Well, you know, we haven't taken control yet, and I'll give you a mic back in a minute. We haven't taken control back. This is the unfortunate thing. A lot of people in power, a lot of people, U.S. attorneys, they really don't understand the common law. They really don't understand the common law republic. They don't understand the fact that we are not to be under civil law or any man-made legislative law, but only the laws of nature's God. That's the only law the people are under. And yet, you know, we have USC 18, which is criminal law, which is only to be applied. And even that, you know, they really can't apply that to government agencies, you know, agents in the different agencies. They have written it up, but the jury, it's up to the jury to decide whether they like the law or not that's going to be tried to be applied against someone who is in government that's been brought up on criminal charges. Now, of course, people working in government can and should be brought up on criminal charges, but their codes are up to the decision ultimately of the real lawmaker. And the real lawmaker is the people themselves through the common law process, the jury process, the jury nullification. They have the final word. They also have the final word not only in the decision of the law and of the facts, but also of the restitution of the injured party, should there be one. And there always has to be an injured party. Of course, the people can be injured by a government agents abusing their power. And then all the people really are being injured by that. So there is an injured party there. But, you know, the jury can decide, well, we don't think that law is strong enough. We think we should punish the person even more. Or we think it's too strong, or it doesn't fit in this case, or we're not going to apply any prison sentence here. We're going to instead apply some kind of a restitution in another fashion, whatever that might be. And when an individual is injured, they need to be restored. For every injury, there must be a remedy. That's a common law maxim. Okay, so these people, and even the general Flynn, I don't think they really understand that law, what common law is. We are not to be under any legislated law. Period. They don't have the power to write law to control our behavior. We never gave them that power. We placed ourselves under God's law, under common law. The people will decide. The people will decide whether there may be a crime or not and who might be the person who committed that crime through a grand jury. 25 individuals coming together to make that decision. The people will decide innocent or guilt after a court process, a court hearing, and an evaluation of all the facts by 12 individuals, and then they will come together and decide whether someone was guilty or not. They will decide what the punishment should be, or the restitution in most cases should be. They will decide, not a judge. Not an individual hired by the government or some political animal. No, they cannot do it. That has nothing to do with us. Judges judge equity only. They judge administrative courts, and once it turns criminal, it goes to the people. Even under equity, it goes to the people, and the people have the power of nullification. That is where, all law comes from God, ultimately. That's the law of God. But he puts it into our hand to sit as the king's bench and to exercise and execute his law. And as we see it in our own hearts as 12 people come together. So they just don't understand that. And this is what we need to explain to not only to them, but to most people. Most people don't understand that. And therein is the purpose of the book, Government by Consent, which lays that position out quite clearly throughout the whole book, as a matter of fact. But final comment, Melissa, and then we got to go on to the next caller.
How do I know if I'm going to, you told me where to start. How do I know if there's people already in my county? Is there some kind of
directory? We do have a page. Let me mute you because again I'm getting that feedback. Hang on a minute. Okay, we do have a page, okay, you come under People's Duty, and you come down to, let's see, the Committees of Safety, you'd come to that, and you'll see, I don't know if you're watching your browser there, since you're on the computer, I'm sharing my desk here. So you come under People's Duty, the Committee of Safety, let me get back there again, and you come down to Organizing, I think it's Organizing U.S. State Committee. Let me see if that's it. Instruction. I think Organizing U.S. Committee of Safety. Let me click on that. No, that's not it. That is a process, but let me see. Committees of Safety. Oh, find your county Committee of Safety right here. So you click on that. Find your county COS, County Committee of Safety. And you'd come down and you click on your state. I'll click on, what state are you in? Let me see, Ohio, is it?
Ohio.
Ohio. Okay, so let me click on Ohio. And what county are you in?
Claremont.
Okay, we don't have anybody in Ohio that started anything within any counties. Let me go back, and I'll show you what it might look like when someone signs up. I'll go to New York. Okay, in New York here, for instance, we have two counties so far that are working on committees of safety, Dutchess County and Wayne County. and you have the first name of the people that are organizing it and their phone numbers, okay? And so if that was the case, you would call that person up and collaborate with them and start working to organize. Since there is nobody in your county at this point in time, you can go up and sign up and put your, you know, just once you sign up, then what happens is you have the ability to, well, your first name will show up, your county will show up, and your phone number will show up. And that information is already, you know, when you come in and log in, you already put that information. If that needs correcting, you can go correct that information by going up here to my account and start correcting your information. But so you can sign up here. Let me see where that button is. I don't know if Carl put that button up here yet. I know we wanted to put it in a more prominent place and make sure it's easy for people to see. But it is in here. It gives a little information to lead up into finding it. for more information, contact your county district coordinator. You know, I don't know where that button is. It should be here, but I don't see it. Let me go back to New York. And I don't know where that is. There should be a place where you press a button to put your name in here. So I'll have to find it, and we'll get back to you next week. That's something I'll have to check with Carl. I know I talked with Carl about. You might be able to go. He might have set it up where you can go up into my account. I don't want to press on this because you'll see my personal information up here. But you press on my account, and I think there's a button in there that you can buy, a little box where you can click and become, the individual, a contact individual. But remember, this is a joint effort with many people, so no one's accounting on one person to go through this alone and to organize it alone. No, we all organize it. Many minds, many hands make easy work. And so, you know, you sign up and someone else comes in and they contact you, and next thing you know it, and then you start contacting people in your neighborhood. You can also download a list of all the members in your state, okay, so you can communicate with them. You'll get their name, first name, their counties, and their phone numbers, and you can make calls to those people to encourage them, entice them to join the Committee of Safety, and work it from there, and you build it together. Everybody educates themselves and together and works the thing together and gets the job done. Okay, we're going to have to go to the next caller, though, Melissa. Appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to, what is that, Chatelli L? I'm not sure how to pronounce that, but go right ahead. Your mic was just opened up.
Okay. My Appalachian is Chatelli. Okay, so I have two or three questions.
What's your first name?
Chatelli.
Chatelli. Okay, I'll try to remember that. Chatelli. Okay.
Okay. So my first question is, is anybody expatriating to get out of the jurisdiction of the United States?
Is anybody what?
Expatriating.
No, these people have committed treason. They can create anything they want. That doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it lawful. It doesn't make it part of our government. It is true they've hijacked our government. We've been an oligarchy for quite some time, which is a small group of people behind our government actually controlling everything. And we understand those controls as the deep state. But they're all guilty of treason, and they need to be tried, and if found guilty, executed. And I do believe thousands of people are going to be found guilty, and I think thousands of people are going to be executed. I do believe that. Definitely a lot of people are going to go to jail, a lot more than that. I heard the numbers are very, very high, hundreds of thousands of people involved, because it's far bigger than just in Washington, D.C. This stems down. It goes all the way down into every state and governors and legislators down in the state level, too, and mayors and people at all levels of government. They have betrayed we the people. The United States is still there. The structure of our government is still there. Okay, we're counting on Trump with the military to take it back and give it back to the people. But now we're counting on the people to become educated to be able to receive it, because right now the people can't receive it. As I mentioned a little while ago, I don't know whether I completed my thought on this, but I mentioned a little while ago, I listen to a lot of different programs, and people are looking for something to do. And I hear these people who are running the programs and talking to people, maybe, you know, they're interviewing someone or reporting on the news, and they're telling the people, their listeners, you got to get involved. You got to get out there. You got to do it. Only the people can take back the America. We got to do it. You got to do it. Get active. Go out there. Do what? People don't know what to do. And I appreciate that. I didn't know what to do. I had to research it. And we researched it, and we wrote a book on it, and we wrote handbooks on it, and we created a website on it, and we created an organization on that very issue to take back this nation. We want to exercise our unalienable right to resolve these problems and to and get rid of these people that have stolen our liberty, that have stolen our government, taken control. You know, in the Declaration of Independence, we read, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. The people have not been consenting. For as long as I've been alive, the people have not been consenting. This goes back 80, 90, maybe more years ago, because they don't know how to consent to government. And that's what they need to learn. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter, or to abolish, we have no intentions on abolishing it, but to alter and to institute new servants, new governments. Not rewrite it, because everything's there. We have the Declaration of Independence. We have the Constitution. We have the Bill of Rights. We have the legislators set up, the bodies, and everything is there. The whole structure is there. The court system is there. It's just that we have to take it back, and the people need to know how to take it back. Therein is National Liberty Alliance. So we have the power and the authority to alter it, and to reinstate institute new servants, and organize in such form as shall seem most likely to affect our safety and happiness. We just need to get back to the basics, back to the Constitution. We need to jail these people and execute a lot of these people after we give them a trial, of course, and get back to the beginning. So, our founding fathers created this nation through committees of safety. They constructed all the things we're talking about. We just need to go backward to it. So we here at National Liberty Alliance, we've put it together, what our founding fathers did, and let us execute the same things. Let us build the militia and take control of it. Let us rebuild the court. We already got the court system. Let's just take control of the court system, and we need to take control of orientating the grand juries and the trial juries, giving them an understanding of their power and authority, that they are the author of the law. They make the law, not the legislators. Legislators make law and equity for, you know, again, you know, regulations governing agencies. They have no power or authority to say anything about how we the people act. We need to orientate juries to understand that we need to take back the political process by resurrecting the committee man, the elected committee man, which we've lost at least 50 years or more ago. To my understanding and knowledge from my research, we have not found one elected committee man anywhere in the places we've looked. No, we haven't looked in every state, but we've looked a lot of places. So far, we haven't found any. But even the ones that are elected are probably still under the control and under the puppetry of the New World Order. of the oligarchs, those that have taken control of our nation. So, anyway, you got another question or a comment?
Yeah, I did ask a question, but I don't know how effective that was as far as from with support.
You broke up pretty bad. Try that again. You broke up pretty bad. Can you try that again?
Okay, so I expatriated in 2019, but I don't know how effective that would be if I had to go to court for something.
What did you do at the end of 2019?
Come out of this system is
what you probably did is made a statement and filed it with the county clerk. Is that what you did?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that doesn't really do anything. What it actually does is it alerts them of who you are, and you're just put onto a list of one of the people that really has got to go as far as they're concerned. I'm talking about the deep states. It's not going to buy you anything by having that, you know, that kind of a paper being filed, and if you pulled into court, you know, you're not going to be able to just click your heels and move yourself into a court of justice. You're going to be snagged in their court of injustice. You're breaking up again. Try it again.
I sent it there, and I sent it to the place where people denounce their citizenship.
Yeah. Well, look, by denouncing your citizenship, they can deport you. Just think about that. These people teaching this, and I believe me, I've when I was working, trying to work these things out and figure things out many, many years ago, I came under the hearing of a lot of these people. But as I kept digging and researching and trying to understand what was going on, these people, they're teaching a lot of bad stuff that's damaging. It's going to hurt people, or it could hurt people, shall I say. It doesn't do a darn bit of good anywhere. It doesn't give you any more power or authority. It doesn't put you in any better place where you have some kind of standing or something. They seem to think by doing certain things they're going to get standing. It doesn't do it. You got to understand, you're dealing with the mafia. You're dealing with these people that are controlling our courts. It's like the mafia, okay? They're criminals. They don't care. There's no magic words. There's no paper you can do. There's nothing you can do to get out from their clutches. Now, you can kind of defeat them in different ways, because if you know what you're doing and you see the crime and you start putting it into the record, they do get frightened of that. Then they want you out of their courts when they start to see that, and they want to silence you, and that's one way you can get out of that court if you're pulled into that court. But that requires education. That requires an understanding of the system. That requires an understanding of their strategy. And when you come back, you know, the strategy that I apply is strategy that I discovered. And, you know, I may have learned a little bit from this person, a little bit about that person, and I research here, get a little there, you know, and you put it all together, and I can go in and execute, you know, whatever it is I have to execute in a court and potentially start to signal the judge that I know certain things and I'm going to start putting it into the record, and, you know, and things happen, okay? So that can happen. It's very dangerous, but if you're fighting, if they're taking you to court, you're going to want to get them to court before they take it to court, especially the IRS. That's the ones that that's their tool that they use to come to destroy people, the IRS. And if the IRS is coming out after you, you have to respond to everything they say, because you're building a case. They're building a case. That's what they're doing by sending you papers. And when you don't answer those papers or respond, you're defaulting, and you're defaulting, and you're defaulting. You're acquiescence to the, you know, and if you're not responding, you got to build the case back up point by point. Constantly, paper by paper. And that goes over a course of years, because they don't come out very quickly. It takes time to do it. But once they do the lien, the notice of lien, that's the day you want to file a court case right away, so you get the upper hand and control the court. They have more control by opening the court against those people and suing them all than if they get you in, because the court they'll pull you in will be a criminal court, and they'll try to prosecute you under USC 26 and USC 18. Those are the two U.S. codes that they'll use, titles that they'll use in order to destroy you. But if you can get them into court before they get you into court, you know, you've prevented them from coming out after you criminally, number one. And the other thing is you have the upper hand, but you got to understand what you're doing. And if people's concerned with this, they need to really start to bone up on these things. And National Liberty Alliance teaches this stuff. Go out to our educational tab. And, you know, Brent Brent gives courses in law and different things. Connect with Brent and go to his site. Go to commonlawyer.com and sign up for his courses. You know, we have courses, really, which is building what we're building. Brent will be more in-depth in court access and different things in the courts than we would be. But we do have a lot of information under our educational tab. And if you come down into court forms, processes, and instructions on that page, you get a lot of information. But you have to have some basic knowledge. I took a course, what was the name of it? Can't think of the name of the course. There was something I bought online, and it gave me a really good understanding of the structure of the court and how things work and how paper flows and, you know, causes of actions and how to write a paper and all that stuff. And I did a crash course, and I went through the whole course in a weekend, 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I came out the other end with a good basic understanding and knowledge of it, and I kept a lot of notes, and I used all the notes that they had and created a book, and that's where I started to come to a real good understanding and to be able to fight my battles in the court. And I got to the point where I'm able to write my own forms, and I share my forms, and, you know, there are other people who write forms. You can use their forms of different things. So. Okay, final statement, and we can move on to the next caller. Go ahead.
Okay, so
try it again, because okay. You're breaking up again. Every time I do that, you come back, and all of a sudden you're not breaking up anymore. Try it again.
If no one is a 14th Amendment citizen, what jurisdictions do the courts have?
Well, first of all, they're playing games with words, and the 14th Amendment I used to be against because I agreed with the idea or the thought that they're really trying to make us a citizen of their civil law. And maybe they have or are trying to do that, but they actually failed in that, because ultimately the word citizen is used in the Constitution, I believe, 7 times. It may have been more than that, but it's used in the Constitution quite a few times. And so there's nothing wrong with being called a citizen. I wouldn't call myself a citizen if I was in court. I'd call myself one of the people that gives me this, you know, I'm the lawmaker, okay? The law is for me, it's by me. We the people, you know, we established and we ordained the Constitution for them. They are under our law. And when we go into our courts, we are the deciders, jury nullification, the power and the authority to say, we don't like that law. We're going to make a law up right now. This is what we're going to do. This is what we say needs to be done. You know, like if they say, well, a person should go to jail for something, we may say, no, they need to pay restitution, okay, not go to jail. And remember, the only equity law or civil law that they might be able to lawfully write, and I wouldn't call it civil law, it's equity, write statutes and regulations. Again, to control themselves, government agencies and commercial activity, interstate commercial activity in the sense of on a federal level. That's what they can write. But we can nullify everything they write in that courtroom. We can say, we don't like this, we're going to do something different. And we're the law. We're the final word.
Yeah.
We're the decision makers. But the people need to get that power and authority back. They need to understand that, and they need to step up, get educated, and get their committees of safety, and let's connect with the sheriff. Let's train our sheriff in the way he should be, under the common law by getting them a book and getting them the sheriff's handbook and getting them involved with the committees of safety, and then let's put our government under control locally, and then when we do it locally, we then collectively can control the state, and collectively then we will control the federal government, and now we will have government by the consent of the people. We will have government who fears the people, because when they get out of line, we'll recall them through the committee men. We'll just take them out of office. We could do that in 90 days to get another election going. Or if they're breaking the law, we can indict them, and that removes them from office. Let's get another election, put someone else in there. You see, people need to know these things, but they don't know them. This is government by consent. And this is what our founding fathers set up for us. Go ahead.
And that was the reason why I asked about the 14th Amendment citizen thing, because that's how I became a citizen of the United States by the 14th Amendment. But as far as I understand, it wasn't ratified. And so our question.
No, the 14th Amendment. No. The 14th Amendment was ratified. The 16th Amendment was never ratified. The 17th Amendment was never ratified. But the 14th Amendment was ratified. And again, you can look at that 14th Amendment in two different ways. You can read it in light of the common law and within the structure and framework of our founding documents, or they'd like to see it in the way of they've written a structure of a construction of law going all the way back to the Organic Act of 1871 and building off of that and creating this citizen as somebody that's underneath their thumb, someone that's underneath their authority. No. They don't have authority over the people. They may have authority that we gave them, that we vested them with, authority to write law, authority to govern in certain agencies, the authority to rule in equity courts through judges, but they don't have the authority. We never gave them the authority to even step a foot into our courts of law, nor have we ever given them the authority to write any law, any kind of regulations, any kind of statutes, any kind of code to control our behavior. That's between me and God. My behavior is up to me and my relationship with my maker. And if I injure someone by being out of control, then it's up to the people to deal with me and to indict me and to judge me and to force me to restore myself back under the system and restore the people I injured. You see, that's the system we're supposed to be in. We are the only common law republic in the world. We are the second one ever. England was never really a common law republic, never. Okay, yeah, they had the common law. Where they failed is they made the same failings that was made in Israel with Solomon, and where the king, they wanted a human king, okay, and they got a king. Well, that's what happened in England. They got human kings, and it caused nothing but problems. They were supposed to be there to protect our unalienable rights, to protect our liberties, to make sure we get due process. But they are just mere men, and they continue to fail, and so they never had it. Israel was the only one that had it until they lost it, when Israel wanted a king, and they said, give us a king, and they said, go get your king, and they got Saul, and we know how all that turned out, okay? But America, you know, George Washington was offered the crown. He refused it, and he was stood with the republic, and the structure we have. We are a natural law republic, the second in the history of the world, of the known world, we only the second natural law republic ever on the face of this earth. And it's something so unique and so different and so great, if only the people would learn about it.
And it was great because the 14th Amendment.
Try it again because you're breaking up again. And,
sorry.
Well, what are you? Are you too far away from your mic or something? I don't know what it is, but when you come back, you correct it very quickly. But go ahead.
It's because I use loudspeaker so I can hear you.
Oh, okay.
And when I talk, I could, you know, it makes that feedback.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'd like to learn a lot more about the common law, because again, the 14th Amendment thing, you know, they were saying that with the Dred Scott case, that would be a case that would be in my favor, because they said we could never be citizens, you know, because we're of African descent. And so, you know, so I just need to know the common law so that they can't take advantage of things that don't apply to me.
Well, look, you know, the courts will take advantage of anyone that comes before them because they're evil. Evil has gripped America. Evil has taken control of our judicial system. Evil has taken control of our legislators. Evil has taken control of even our administrative, you know, government, which, of course, is the presidency, until Trump came in to play. But we're going to get it back. We're going to get it back real soon. I'm very tempted to read a chapter next week in the book of Isaiah. And, you know, it does give some information that's very, very interesting. You know, I became aware and knowledgeable of that chapter maybe about 5 or 6 years ago. And it's a very comforting book, because, or chapter particularly, because God talks about the day of judgment coming against the prince of darkness, which ultimately rules this world. You know, Satan is prince and power of the air. And being prince and power of the air is a place of conversation. And so that's what the air is identifying with, prince and power of the conversations, of the narrative, of the control. And clearly we see Satan is in control of the narrative within this nation and within this world. All this craziness and stupidity and destruction and evil. Satan does control the narrative. And of course he controls it within within people. And so we have all these people doing all these evil things. It's even, you know, we don't even want to mention or talk about. People are going to go, you know, people are going to be so distraught and I don't even know what to say when they really hear the truth of what's really going on and who's been controlling this country and how evil they've been doing and how they've been involved with all of this, these different things that are just total evil. Satan worshiping and you know, human trafficking and child trafficking. I mean, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, all that's about to be revealed. And the Bible does talk about that. But I'm very careful with talking about things that get into prophecy, because you can really get lost with that. Very difficult things, and people have different perspectives or perceptions of how to look at those things. So I try to stay away from that. But there are certain things that are pretty obvious, and I think we all agree, anybody that is a Christian and it looks into these things, I think we all agree on certain things, and that is that judgment is going to come. And God says he's going to judge the evil of this world in this world before the end. And that's what Isaiah 14 is about. And I might read that next week, just read it with maybe a minute of comment on it and move on. And that might give a lot of hope to people. I know it did to me. I knew a long time ago that, you know, I saw that coming to being when Trump came into office, and I heard his speeches and I heard what he was doing and I saw what he's doing. I immediately started to think maybe 14 is about to be, you know, fulfilled. And at this point, I think it is going to be fulfilled. So evil is going to be destroyed in this world. That's the key, judged in this world, because God said that before the end of the world, he will judge evil. But again, that gets into preaching and prophecy, and I want to be very careful not to do that here.
But me, that's why us mandated and enforcing.
You're going to have to get back to your mic and fix your mic again.
Keep forgetting. Yeah. I was just saying, to me, this would be my last comment, but to me, because we're standing up and enforcing the Constitution and using the common law courts, that's judging the evil, because
oh yeah,
we're
yeah.
we're calling everybody, you know, we're calling
absolutely.
Them on their stuff.
You hit the mark right on the head. You hit the nail on the head right there, because it's exactly where Satan is going to be judged, in courts of justice right here in this world. And that's when the courts return back to God, where we get the king of the court, which is God, and the king's bench, which is the jury, to do the will of what is right and written in our hearts, because God says the laws are written in our hearts, so we already have, we know right from wrong. We live in this world, so we have experience of this world, and when we see an injustice, we know what an injustice is, and we see an injury, we know what that injury is, and collectively we can sit down and think about it and figure out how to restore that person who was injured, because common law requires that for every injury there must be a remedy, and the person has to be restored. Our court system is not about remedy. It is not about restoring the injured party. It's about finding someone guilty, finding them, taking everything they got so they got more money, putting them in jail, and other people making money in the jail system, and it just goes on and on and on, and the victims are just tossed back into the streets. No restitution, nothing. And that's evil.
Yeah, and that's what we're here to do. We're turning that around.
That's right. Okay, I got to go to the next caller because we're coming close to the end. We've got a few people, all right?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to Fareed. You got the mic. Go right ahead. Fareed, F-A-R-E-E-D. You got the mic. One more time for Fareed. You got the mic. Okay, if you're having problems, maybe you can get back into the queue. We'll go to the next person. Let's go to someone in Phoenix, Arizona. First name, please.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yep, what's your first name and what's your question or comment?
My first name is Cynthia, but I'm on the website Carmody.
Okay.
And I just wanted to share. I listened to a couple of those. People who were saying, talking, and you are absolutely correct about putting a target on your back when mm-hmm. you do some of the other stuff that they have you do. And really, it doesn't seem to really make a difference. But what does make a difference is, and I thought that I was really educated, because I'm going to tell you, I have two master's degrees. I have a master's in social work. I have a master's in theological studies. But it wasn't until I started taking this. This class, it's unbelievable. What it did for me is, I'm fighting my case in court. I'm fighting mm-hmm. it because I didn't do anything. And before they hemmed me up, I was studying this all the time. So I just never really felt like, you know, why should I, because I think the one thing, because I listen to tapes, I belong to a whole bunch of these things. Although National Liberty Alliance was the first one I did because I was in Ohio when I first joined it. But I was learning about which I didn't know this, that whenever they bring charges against you, the prosecution, because they have an identity bond, they have to have paid the taxes on the alternate valuation on a carryover basis to bring the charges, period, against the private person. That's what I was learning, right? Mm-hmm. So when the police harassed me, they basically harassed me. They woke me about. I was sleeping in my truck. So they basically harassed me. And if they hadn't startled me, I probably wouldn't even open the door for them, just because I haven't learned. But I was listening to that other lady who was saying that, like the 14th Amendment, about, you know, because that's me. I'm of color too. But what I also realized is there was a lot of things that, as far as that 14th Amendment, it's like they were able to. The government was kind of like giving the black people a chance to have, because they're a chattel. They were giving them a chance to have, you know, citizenship, whatever. But they were also told that they had the option to become American state national, but they didn't give them the tools. So no one got the tools. And I don't think that anyone has gotten the tools, up until because of the internet, people are starting to learn it. Because this is something that's, this remedy has been in place, I know since 1933 about because it has to do with, taking things back. So they have start with Franklin Delano Roosevelt, have systematically taken things from us without us knowing about it. Because it took me a long time to realize. I mean, like, I always knew about my rights and stuff. But this class, this governor of consent, it breaks it straight down. It makes it real clear. And so this morning I was on the phone talking to the clerk of courts. And I filed a jurisdictional challenge, right? But it wasn't, I did everything I was, because I used your guys' paperwork. And I did everything I was supposed to do, including I got the green letter back. But it wasn't filed. So because when I filed it, I sent a precipe with it, and I also sent an envelope so they can send me back a copy. Well, when I talked to her on the phone today, she said, well, did you make other copies? I said, well, I probably didn't, but I mean, so that means they don't need, because I didn't make other copies, they don't have to file anything. And so then she said, no, the lady was very, very helpful, very helpful. And I had to try to, you know, I had to remember that because, yeah, she was very helpful. Because kind of dealing with this can really make a person angry. But it's really not their fault, because I think that some of these judges, I don't know if it's the judges, but I do think that some of these lawyers are as dumbfounded as probably we are.
Well, yes, some of them scratch their head. Yeah, some of them scratch their head and wonder about this. And, you know, look, it's the Bar Association. They've taken control of the education of lawyers, and there's not many schools that are non-bar, and a lot of the schools that are non-bar, they can't even get out there to practice law. They have to get into the system. They still have to take the bar exam, and they have to get the approval of the bar.
I want to stop you there, because I looked at the bar yesterday, and there's no place on it where you take an exam, because it was saying it's like a voluntary organization, and they kind of support you as you go out into the world after you. I know you have to take the LSAT, because I took it, but I have yet to find where you take a bar exam. I can't find it.
Well, yeah, I never looked to see or anything. I have no interest in it, but what I will tell you, though, this goes all the way back to the Revolution. You know, the king already was trying to destroy, even the very beginning, the Declaration of Independence. I mean, from that point forward, he was already trying to destroy the government we were trying to build, and he already was sending out, ultimately lawyers. Lawyers were already here, bar attorneys from Britain. Right. The British bar was here in our nation already. They were here trying to practice law and maintain and keep the slaves under the control, and they did that through the courts, or they were trying to do that through the courts, but it didn't work too well.
I remember that because I don't think it worked too well, because people were educated and people would learn, they would read, and people were part of the
grand jury. They understood liberty and they understood the common law, at least those people that were really, you know, make the things happen. And but in 1822, there was the Treaty of Verona, and that was that was between the king and the pope, and they issued letters of marque and reprisal to the members of the bar.
You're going right back to what I was talking about. See, so that's how. Okay, go ahead, finish. I want to hear, because you're in.
Yeah, to covertly undermine our political and economic system. Nothing has changed. That continues to this day, and they have destroyed our courts completely.
So what do you
They've
mean?
Removed
well,
our common
I mean,
law.
Huh? Well, I know. So I mean, like. I was saying that, is this what this is? We have been relegated.
Oh yeah.
To almost the lowest of animals, that you have to go and plead guilty, and like right now I'm fighting these people because I know that they're wrong, and
they indeed view us as chattel under their control to be sold.
When I read the Constitution, they don't have all the statutes, they all apply to them. My question is, how are they able to flip it on us and try to keep it there?
Oh, because look, it was a slow burn. You know, it's sort of like that idea of the frog in the water that boils, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I know that. So that's kind of
the idea. And then when it's time to finally, you know, realize what's going on, it's too late. And that's where we're at. We don't have the controls. The controls are not in our hands. The only way the controls can get back in our hands is if the people organize together from the grassroots level, create the committees of safety, do what our founding fathers did, and take back control.
You know,
because we
can right
take back
that.
Controls.
You're right about that. But you know what? In the first revolution, there wasn't a lot of people. It was just a few.
Right.
And, I say that only because
it's true, and there was quite a few people who understood, because you look at America, a lot of the people in America were already educated.
Right.
Okay, a lot of people could read, and they were educated. Not everyone, but a lot of people. And
we all knew the law.
Well, that was the key. They were under the common law because they were participating. They were partaking in the common law.
Okay.
They had the committees going on, and people were involved in that. And again, reading was the key, you know.
Yeah, reading is the key.
Yeah. So education is the key. If you want to look at everything I've ever done, I learned through books. I mean, I don't have any higher education or anything.
I learned through books. I totally agree with you. And I think that once I get done with this, once I get done with this class and everything I'm doing, I think run for sheriff. I don't know. I'm going to do something to try to make a difference. Because I just think that I can't sit around with this knowledge and not share. I mean, these people in these courtrooms, it's unbelievable. I don't even recognize. Those are not courts.
No. They've destroyed our courts. They've destroyed them. In 1934, the Rules Enabling Act, written by the bar, was established by Supreme Court. They were all bar attorneys. All those judges of the Supreme Court.
All that stuff goes on. Isn't it a fact? And maybe I'm wrong. Is it a fact, or could it be that once you recognize that and say I'm going through these changes and I'm looking at all these statutes and I know they don't apply to me?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can still go through their process, but at some point, they're unlawful. They're not even supposed to be putting those on me.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even apply. They apply to governments only, is what the Constitution was.
The only thing we could do is indict him and put him in jail, and that's what we're doing. We've indicted over 200 federal judges.
I think it can't be just judges, it has to be prosecution.
Absolutely. But it all starts in the judicial system, and it does start with judges. There are other people that get indicted also, but mainly it's judges because they're the ones making the decision. But
They're allowing it.
You're absolutely right.
Because the one thing, they're like thick as thieves. I think earlier on in this case, I sent in an affidavit of validation. And it had all these proofs of claims on it, and I'd forgotten about it. And here I get a ruling. I get something that really says the judge, because it says in there, I guess she figures out that, because I didn't put it in as cause, but I just filed it. But it was for the prosecution, because it was part of the interrogatory questions.
Mm-hmm.
So they say, well, he doesn't have to answer those. We're just going to dismiss it. Really?
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't go to trial. I just do what you tell me to do. And I've told him many times, guess what? I'm the reason why you have a job. I'm part of the people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's what I say.
They're just evil. And it's so difficult to get through their system. But yeah, you can trap them, and you could have put them in certain positions and get some kind of something out of the court system, or at least get protected. But it is difficult.
Have you seen, because I was reading about this habeas corpus, and supposedly it should work.
Absolutely. Habeas corpus is a security. It's written in the Constitution, the Article 1. I believe it's in Section 10.
And they can't ignore it like they do some of these motions and affidavits.
But they do. We've sent in many habeas corpuses, and most of them are ignored by the judges and removed from the court system. And we've indicted the judges.
It's supposed to secure due process. So that is the only sure thing, because honestly, I really feel like there needs to be something in place to stop this madness. They have to be held accountable somehow.
Absolutely.
We have to be able to do something to them, because otherwise, you're wasting your time, I'm wasting my time, you know what I mean? And this is our country.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, look, we're running out of time here, and I'd like to take one other person before we close down. But good call, and hopefully we'll talk again soon. You know?
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's take our final person here. Fareed is back from California. Fareed, go right ahead. You got the mic. I'm only going to give you a couple of minutes because it's bedtime for me. It's late. I got to get to sleep. But go ahead, Fareed.
Yeah. Hi. Good evening. Thank you so much for all you do. I really appreciate it. I realize how difficult it is for doing what you're doing. You're doing an outstanding job, and I thank you. I wish I could help you more, but you know, the deep state and others have stolen everything I got.
But even all of us.
Yeah. But you know what you're doing is just outstanding. I know how difficult it is to pull together what you've done, and I thank you so much for it. Question I have is that if you witness a criminal offense committed in court and there are witnesses, wouldn't that be their ethical and moral obligation to file an affidavit of treason and file it into the case, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's a difficult thing to do. I'm about ready to do something similar to that in a court case that I'm in where the judge refuses to give me the jurisdiction. This is a federal judge in a federal court, which is very strange that they don't want to tell me the jurisdiction, because there is no jurisdiction that I can fit into that they belong. So they've robbed me of my court of record, you know, my common law court that I'd opened up. And so I keep get silenced, and they refuse to give me the jurisdiction. And I challenge the jurisdiction, and I explain to the judge, well, look, once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. And certainly you can't decide it because you already think and believe you've got jurisdiction and you're the problem. You know, so someone else has to make that decision, and it can't be you. But I couldn't even get all that out because they don't want me to speak at all. They return my papers. They silence me constantly. So I'm going to file a paper and put all their sins on record and also file it in different places other than the federal court. But you know, where it's going to go, you know, these people are protected, and they still think they're in control, and of course they are still in control. They don't understand what they've already lost, and that the hammer's about to come down, and the rocks that they've been hiding under are no longer going to protect them. So I think the day of judgment is coming. So what we're doing is, and I'm pushing for an indictment on this judge, and also they collaborated with other lawyers and a U.S. attorney. They've committed fraud on the court. Fraud on the court is fraud through the machinery of the judicial process. That's what fraud on the court is. And that's what they've committed. They've used the judicial machinery in order to control the court and to deny me of my due process and bring me into jurisdictions unknown and apply laws that have no authority over me. But, you know, it's difficult. But on the other side, these people are going to jail.
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it, according to their code, which obviously doesn't apply to us, two witnesses with affidavit on record that this judge is guilty of treason should suffice.
Mm-hmm.
And that under their statute and under the Article 3, Section 3 of the Constitution, it clearly says treason against the United States.
Right.
It's only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort.
Right.
Well, them is us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Them is us.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we got to keep up the battle, do the good fight. You know, it doesn't matter how many battles we lose as long as we win the war. Look at Washington. Washington lost most of the battles he fought, but he won the war. That's the key, you know, and that's where we're at. You know, we've been losing battle after battle after battle after battle, but we've been nailing the truth, okay, onto their doors, and that upsets them. You know, we put it into the record, we nail it on the doors, we spread it and file it in many places, and we put it up on the Internet. And they can't run away from that, and so we're laying it out, and the day of reckoning is going to come, and all of that is going to be applied as a judgment against them. Every one of them, every paper we filed is a nail in their coffin. It's just a matter of time, and once the military does what they have to do, and you know, like Trump said, you know, if something isn't done soon, America will not be here in 2022. We cannot wait till 2022. If we wait till 2022, all will be lost, and it'll be too late to change things around. Something must be done, and it must be done now. These are not my words. This is Donald Trump's words over the weekend, okay, in an interview. And that tells us something. And he's been saying, best is yet to come. Military is ready to do what has to be done. There's going to be military tribunals. These people are going to be executed. You know, he signed something when he was in office before he left, bringing back the death penalty by firing squad. And I do believe that thousands and thousands of people are going to be executed by firing squad because they are enemies of the people. They have subverted and destroyed our republic. But it's not totally gone. Everything is still there. It's just up to the people to get educated and take it back. That's what we must do. Take it back.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I appreciate it. So the consensus is that attack him from all angles and file as many papers as you can to the military with affidavits of treason.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right.
And everything we've done here since Trump was running for office, he asked for papers. You know, his people are working for him. But when he was out, campaigning to become president, we connected with him out there in Oregon and Oregon, I believe it was. And we were involved with some cases out there with Lavoy Finnegan's murder and the Hammonds and goodness, I forget the name of the other people. But in any event, he's been getting our papers, and they asked, his people out there asked that we send them everything we're doing. So we've been doing that for almost 5 years now. But he's not the only one. We've been filing it with other agencies or other places, the attorney generals, for instance. We were filing with Barr, and before that we were filing it with the other attorney general. I forget his name, but in any event. So, and our papers are everywhere. We also have a place in the courts in the Northern District here. We open up a place, a court case for the sole purpose of filing our papers, and we've been filing them up there for 5 years.
Yeah.
So everything is on the record. Plus, the United States Supreme Court, we served them with I don't know how many papers, many, many papers.
Yeah, so, I applaud your energy level, your intentions, and your good deeds. God be with you. And my prayers are with you and with your family. And I hope yours is with mine.
Thank you. Godspeed to you too, and Godspeed to everyone here on the call and others who will join us. So with that, we're going to end the call. Appreciate it, and hopefully we'll talk to you again maybe next week or another time. Thank you.
Looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank
Good
you.
Night.
God Good night. Bless. Good night. Okay, everyone, thanks for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, same time, same place. Good night, everybody. Thank you.